This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
the
be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to be nations. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking whole train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought you meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I'm just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
You try to scream, but dare I take the sound before you make it. You start to freeze as someone looks you right between the eyes.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening in mid-October. And with us, as always, is the original Ken Bone, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
You know, he looks...
Yeah, I know.
He looks like... Well, not him. Oh, okay. Well, not besides him. He reminds me of Joe Romanello that you used to work with, that I currently work with. He kind of looks like him, too. But
Romanello's still there, huh?
Yes, he is.
I feel like we should talk about this until our guest comes in. Mark Claire,
that's true.
How are you tonight?
What's up, gentlemen? How's it going? We're already getting into the Ascent Media time.
Yeah, usually we wait till
because Ken Bone looks like Joe Romanello. He does.
For inside jokes, only the three of us get. This is going to be compelling podcasting. Tune in, guys. Three and a half hours of this.
Unless Brian Eustein is listening somewhere.
you know he is. Come on.
Who was that? Was it... LaRue.
I was kind of thinking a more Licata for Ken Bone.
What was that? LeRae? What was that guy's name? The one that pushed the guy down the elevator?
LeRae Galan. He's probably listening too right now. Put the guy down the elevator.
I forgot about him.
He randomly popped in my head like the other day for some reason.
He's probably in jail.
Well, he was the one that tore up the bathroom too, right?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
You guys didn't sign that non-disclosure agreement with the company, did you? I sure didn't. So
no.
I think we're in the clear. Okay.
No.
Cool.
Our
elevator.
Our department totally destroyed that. So we blew that thing up to pieces, and then we got Chad fired. Anyway,
About a year to realize that eating Duchess every day wasn't healthy. When I realized I put on about 15 pounds.
I had Duchess once. I had Duchess once, and I was done. That was it.
Only once. It was actually. I mean, for fast food, it wasn't bad.
Why'd you hit the wrong source? The onion ring grease. My finger slipped.
I think Eifert.
Today's Place to Be podcast brought to you by Duchess.
I think because I just picture Eifert like slurping down French fries from there, and I just can't. I can't do it.
Yep. No, I can't do it either. Welcome, Place to Be Nation.
If one of these people actually was listening to this
We're
right
find
now.
Oh my God. That's my guess. If they are,
yes. We're definitely gonna find out.
Oh God.
I'm
gonna All right. Welcome.
Though we talked to Send Media, so we'll see.
That's right. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, episode 422 of the Mothership. Yeah, Mr. Claire, always good to talk to you, sir. Of course, the host of the Lions of Liberty podcast as we are heading down the home, if you can call it the home stretch, very bumpy home stretch.
I love that I don't even have to do my own plugs. That's great.
No, why not? You're not on a lot, so, and this is a big show tonight. So
he isn't?
JR, you were not in Scituate with the Silverback looking at pottery and paintings. You were off on another outdoor excursion this weekend, huh?
If I was
there,
I would have stuffed him in one of those big pots.
Caved him in the head with it. Yes. That's where he was.
No, I went somewhere. Weymouth. South Weymouth to a fall festival. It was entertaining. Got to meet Elsa for like the fourth time in my life, so that was fun.
Oh, very nice. Oh, good. And it's definitely hitting fall now after the, I think, Indian summer has ended.
Indian summer's continuing, hopefully, tonight with a sweep.
That's right. Woohoo! Go Coco! Two-run homer against his former team. Suckers.
Coco, beware. He's playing baseball now.
Killing the Red Sox. Yeah, two sweeps could be concluded tonight. Indians and the Cubbies tonight could finish off the Giants, but Baumgartner's pitching tonight. So, but we are...
none of them have Gary Sanchez on their team, so none of them matters. The World Series is basically secondary to having Gary Sanchez at this point. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Tonight, though, we are going to be in a state whose team got embarrassingly dumped in the division series. Mm. But a very memorable show, JR, for a few reasons. And, you know, in our 2000...
what is going on here?
Claire, stop hanging out with Slater.
You know, Mr. Belden goes to a karaoke bar about 20 miles from me, right?
Does he really?
Then where is he?
Why aren't you getting him on the show?
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, okay, I guess I could try it. Never thought about it till now. First, I'm going to try to see if he wants to do a Lions of Liberty interview, and then, depending on how that goes.
He is a wrestling fan. We know that, so.
Well, JR, you may actually get to him before Claire does, because I believe he's at the Rhode Island Comic Con in about
a
month.
That's like a challenge. I could drive to Burbank tonight and see Mr. Bill. Come on.
And I am not attending Comic Con, so Claire's probably going to win.
Anyway, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we are San Antonio spurned.
Ooh.
Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you the 2007 Royal Rumble.
Two-step.
In our, of course, our 2006-2007 report card, JR. Mm-hmm. One Night Stand has been pretty solid since we did it. Yeah. And we had a guest that night. Don't remember who it was. I don't think he remembers either.
Some schlub.
Since that show, JR, no pay-per-view has touched the top spot. Mm. That may change this evening. We'll see.
We'll see.
You'll only bring me on for the very best shows.
That's right. January 28th, 2007, live from the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas. 10-year anniversary, JR, from the last time we were in San Antone. Of course, that was the 1997 Royal Rumble. And then 10 years from this point, JR, we will be back in San Antone for the 2017 Royal Rumble, back at the Alamo Dome. Do you remember the last time we were in the state of Texas?
What year are we in? 07.
WrestleMania 32.
No.
Oh, wait. I thought you were talking about me.
What are you, in a TARDIS?
I don't know. I don't know.
Actually, it's kind of a memorable show. This is the Lone Star State.
Survivor Series 03.
No. Whose birthday was it? Was it yesterday?
No,
I believe it was yesterday was Eddie Guerrero's birthday. Was it yesterday or Saturday?
Oh, yes, yesterday.
Yesterday. Well, our last Texas pay-per-view was No Mercy 2005.
Okay, there you go.
In Houston, so there you go. And this is the Lone Star State's 11th pay-per-view and the fourth in San Antonio. Third different building. Of course, the old Freeman Coliseum for this Tuesday in Texas and the 94 Survivor Series.
The great jet.
That's right. You wish I had him now. you also wish you had Pat Ryan or Ken O'Brien now. Mm. The third different building in San Antonio. All right. Your attendance is 13,500. Your announcers, three tables worth. For the red brand, Raw, good old J.R. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler. For the blue brand, SmackDown, Michael Cole and John Bradshaw Layfield. And for the ECW brand, which I guess you could say is the purple brand or the orange brand or whatever, Joey Styles and Taz. JR, give us our report, Les Sultans.
LeRae was so fucking lazy, too. Awful. all right, we got the Sutton news. It's a long one. He warned me today. I got the message. Or maybe it was yesterday. I don't know. The days blend together.
Boy.
Usually
right when
the 1 o'clock games kick off on the East Coast, when the Jets are about getting underway and, you know, starting track fantasy and everything else, I get the messages from Sutton that the notes are on the way. So kicks my Sunday off well. Theme song, Drones by Rise Against. Buy rate, 491,000. So I'm pretty solid there. Mm-hmm. About a half a mil. Our champions, John Cena, 133 days into his reign. Batista, world champion, 63 days into his. Bobby Lashley, 56 days into his reign as ECW champion. Jeff Hardy at 76 days as IC champ. Chris Benoit, 110 into a U.S. champion run.
Rated RKO, 76 days since they won the tag team titles. Brian Kendrick and Paul London, 252 days as WWE tag team champions. And not even, within 100 days of the longest reigning champion, and that is Gregory Helms. Mm-hmm. 364 days as Cruiserweight champion. He won it, of course, at this event last year in 2006. So there you go. And Mickey James, 63 days into her reign. We are 713 episodes into Raw, 338 into SmackDown, 33 of ECW, 444 of Heat. We have a series of releases here. On the 18th and 19th, they did some bloodletting. CW Anderson was released, 0-2 on TV. Doug Basham, 41-55-1. Jazz, 35-29-2. Rodney Mack, 31-17-0. Pretty record for Rodney Mack. Danny Basham, 41-55-1. Jake Jimini, 11-2. And Jesse Jimini had the same record. So the Jiminis were well protected, I guess, on TV. Tony Mamaluke, 1-8. Sylvester Turkai, surprising release, Scott. He is 7-1 at the time of his relief. Tatanka, sadly, is gone. 12-14-3 on TV in this run. 80 matches total. Very sad. He had a good year back in the company here. 118 Gangrel was released from developmental, so I thought the Brood
Gangrel
was going to
Gangrel was still around?
Yeah, he came back.
And in developmental 5 years later.
So working off that rust
part. Hey, work on that blood spitting thing you were doing. I think if you work on that a couple more weeks, we'll bring you back up.
Work on that coming out. You know, your head is a little left when you come out of the entranceway there, so we need to be a little more straight on. Bill DeMott releases his role as a head trainer in Deep South Wrestling. And we did have one death, and it was a very sad one, Scott Griscolo, for us. Do you remember who it was on January 19th?
I believe it was, and this is very this is crushing, because I know it happened at some point in the first 6 months of the year. So I'm going to guess. I believe it was the iconic Bam Bam Bigelow.
It was, sir. Former ECW World and Tag Team Champion, former IWGP Tag Team Champion, WCW Hardcore Champion, and Tag Champion. Passed away at the age of 45, found by his then-girlfriend, Janice, I'm not even going to try, at his home. The autopsy revealed he died from multiple drugs found in his system, plus it showed that Bigelow was suffering with heart and back problems. So,
let me look it up here. Remensowitz?
Yeah, something like that.
Remenskowitz? Do you remember at that time, early? I think it was early 07, JR, we were talking about, we found out that he owned like a burger joint in the middle of Pennsylvania or whatever, and you and I were going to make a... We were going to make a trek to his burger joint.
We never got there.
Not too late, guys. That place still open? I'll take a road trip.
I don't think it's...
Pick up Belding and we'll check it out.
Exactly.
Yeah, me and Belding are going to road trip out to Midwest PA, Center PA, wherever the hell this burger joint is.
We should send Brad on a road trip to find it. All right. So, yes. Some vintage dirt sheet news. The Great Khali's moved from ECW to Raw as a result of Triple H's injury. So there you go, Scott. So they think of your boy. Okay. During the Donald Trump, who was portrayed by Ace Steel, and versus Rosie O'Donnell, portrayed by Kylie McLean, some fans in attendance could be heard chanting TNA and VKM, while Vince and Lillian Garcia were trying to... What?
This happened?
You don't remember that? Donald Trump versus Rosie
O'Donnell? No, I wasn't watching. You forget. I wasn't not. I did not watch wrestling at all at this time.
First of
all,
I don't forget. I don't care. There's a big difference. Don't tell me.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yes.
That's my whole gimmick. My whole gimmick is that I haven't seen like 05 through 012.
Well, it's on the network, so you should go check it out. Donald Trump and Rosie.
I'm doing it with you guys as you go through the Vintage Vault. Come on. I'm playing along. Right. Playing the home game.
Jesus Christ. Some fans in attendance heard chanting TNA and VKM. Vince and Lillian tried to ignore it. Some fan behind Vince kept saying TNA, TNA in the chairman's ear. When this happened, Vince's body language changed from excited to slouched down and bored while the Scott Trade Center chanted the competition. I like how Vince is like so emotionally unstable that, like, you know, he's all excited for this thing and like one guy yells in his ear and he gets all dejected over it. It's looking less likely that Big Show will be ready for WrestleMania, and a new name being linked with a possible match against Hulk Hogan is now Great Khali, as Vince has been wanting to play off WrestleMania 3, of course, in the same arena. Vince has brought up names of Mick Foley and Chris Jericho to make special appearances at WrestleMania as well. The company have ended the pay-per-view press conferences effective immediately. Speculations that too many people would come to the events to chant TNA and VKM. At the previous press conferences, the chants were loud and made things worse when Jonathan Coachman acknowledged them. Matt Stryker continues to have heat with the locker room. It's said that he's been changing alone. The heat goes back to 2005 when Stryker openly told some of the road agents in the Raw locker room that he was better than that. The Raw locker room was better than SmackDown's. Word got back to Chris Benoit, Hardcore Holly, and JBL, and they were angry. CM Punk's clean
those
loss.
Those are not the guys you want word to get back to about things.
No, yeah. Absolutely, particularly in that time period.
Yeah, definitely not. Show up with a lot of anger in their pants. CM Punk's clean loss to Hardcore Holly in the January 9th ECW, possibly punishment for disagreement over the Elimination Chamber. Hulk Hogan made an appearance on Bubba the Love Sponge, and he received a call from Vince McMahon's secretary to discuss the Hall of Fame. He put the secretary in a loudspeaker while she read off the names, and they were the Von Erichs, the Ultimate Warrior, the Original Sheik, Ric Flair, Mr. Fuji, Nick Bockwinkel, Muhammad Ali, Mr. T, Mike Tyson, Howard Finkel, Jim Ross, Ken Patera, King Curtis, Ted DiBiase, Jake Roberts, Honky Tonk Man, Randy Savage, Dusty Rhodes, Dick Ebersol, the Wild Samoans, the Big Boss Man, Bob Backlund, Rick Rude, Bushwhackers, Rocky Johnson, and the Brooklyn Brawler.
That was the whole class? Jesus.
She was shocked when... No, no. Well, this is names they were discussing for the...
Oh, okay.
Potentially for the
no, I figured as much.
After she was told she was live on the air, she was shocked. WWE has now approached Hulk Hogan with three potential scenarios for WrestleMania. One's against Great Khali. One is against Umaga. Or a match against Shane McMahon, which would see Donald Trump in the Hulkster's corner. So, let's see how that unfolds. On January 30th, it was announced the Ring of Honor champion and PR champion Samoa Joe would be leaving ROH. Started his farewell tour. And Wrestling Society X debuted on MTV2 on January 30th. So there you go. And JTG defeated Lance Cade in the dark match.
Yes, he did. All right, let's get started. We
fuck
have
yourself.
Four.
What? I said go fuck yourself.
Jesus. What are you two sharing on the beach? All right, let's get started. We have four matches on the undercard. This is the only one that does not involve a title.
Mm-hmm.
But a pretty good tag team match, JR, that is continuing a pretty hot feud that started a few months earlier and raged through the end of 2006. Give
so
us a lowdown.
Hot. So hot. So hot. On 112, Joey Mercury returned to SmackDown, costing Matt Hardy his beat-the-clock challenge match against Mr. Kennedy. Mercury tried to bash in Hardy's face and later vowed not to stop until Hardy's face was as bad as his. On the 115 Raw, Jeff Hardy teamed with Maria to defeat Johnny Nitro and Melina. And on the 119 SmackDown, Matt defeated Mercury in a match. But afterwards, Nitro and Melina showed up and Eminem beat down Hardy, dropping him with a snapshot on the concrete floor. And the next Monday, Jeff defeated Mercury after dropping him on his face. With a twist of fate, Eminem gained some momentum on the 126 SmackDown, defeating Ashley, Brian Kendrick, and Paul Undone. So here we go with this match. A big rematch from December to Dismember. Mercury back with his gnarly injury, but wearing a face guard. JR says Eminem's hell-bent on making the Hardys pay and suffer the same fate. Hardy reunion tour still going on, as is Eminem's. Eminem attacks off the bell with a quick tag, working over Matt, targeting his face. Matt punches his way free and tags in Jeff, who lands a mule kick. Mercury slips free and tags Nitro, but Jeff takes him down and hits a double leg drop to his gut for two. Hardy starts to tag and double team, wiping out both Eminem members. Matt catches Nitro with a neck breaker, but Nitro pops him in his injured jaw and tags out.
In your jaw.
With John Cena. Eminem focuses on the neck and jaw. While tagging in and out and double-teaming, Matt's able to dodge a dive off the second rope and make the tag. Jeff comes in and mows through Nitro, hitting a gourd buster and a whisper in the wind for two counts. Things break down from there. Everyone's brawling until Jeff eats Nitro's knees on the top rope splash. Eminem double-teams and quick-tags Jeff, landing some strikes and targeting the midsection. Jeff backchops Mercury and tags, but the referee missed it. The heat segment rolls on. Jeff finally mule kicks free and tags in Matt, who comes in hot on both Mercury and Nitro. Lots of back and forth and brawling from all four until Matt hits Nitro with a twist of fate and Jeff lands a swanton for the win. I thought it was a really damn good old school match. It was hard fought, double heat segment, great hot tag, and it's proof how far the Hardys have come in the ring. Scott, we talked about this last week, but being able to work this style of a match at such a high level, no weapons, no bullshit, no interference, just, you know, old school classic tag style. And no gimmicks needed at all. And it ends up being quite good. And, of course, good heat and aggression on both ends. The story's basic. There's no bullshit. I thought it was a really great hot opener for the San Antonio crowd. And what do you think, Mr. Clare?
Yeah, well, even not having really been too privy to the build-up to the feud, I think they really did a good job showing the intensity of the feud within the match. I mean, especially, I think, Joey Mercury coming off that injury. His intensity really shone through. He was the first one to just go after them, and he really showed a lot of fire, I think, on offense. So it sucked me into the match just seeing the intensity, even not, you know, really knowing anything about the feud other than, you know, what I've heard on the Vintage Vault. So I agree. I mean, it's a really good opener, and like you said, it really does show the Hardys have evolved from stuntmen, as they really always were in the early 2000s, late 90s, to actual wrestlers who can just tell a good story that brings in the crowd in the context of what is really just a normal match, but a pretty damn good one. The weird thing, though, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't really watch this stuff at the time, so I most associate Joey Mercury with being in J&J Security. So to see him like this now is so strange to me, because he just looks like the guy from J&J Security with a Rasta wig on, and it feels very out of place. I still see a bald man like in that body, so that's strange to me. But other than that, enjoyable match.
It's good that he kind of got himself back together, because he's a guy that had a lot of rough times. I mean, he had issues before, comes back, gets the busted face, gets hooked again.
That was a real injury, right?
The face? The face one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch it? You should watch it.
I saw the replay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, there was nothing fake about it.
How much they play stuff up as opposed to what the reality of it.
No, it was real, yeah. He caved his face in pretty good, and then he ended up getting hooked on pills again afterwards. So.
All right, step one. This is really the best pick for the opener. I don't think you're obviously not going to do Cena first. You probably didn't want to do Batista Kennedy first, and you certainly didn't want that other mess first. So this was obviously the only choice. And
why wouldn't you just do the main event first like they do nowadays?
Do the Rumble first and this last?
Yeah, why not? Apparently that's how you do things now. Yeah.
Nah. This was easily the best pick for the first match of the show. Get the crowd really fired up for the next three title matches. So, good spot there. Step two. I know they will see, as I tip our hand. We'll see if they meet anymore. But this probably should have been the last match of the feud. I mean, we've gone this fourth pay per view match, I think, involving either them in singles or in a tag. So probably good to just end it here and move on. Mm-hmm. And let the guys move on to other stuff, whether back to singles or, if you want to keep the Hardys together for a bit, whatever. And step three, great ending by the Hardys. As Claire mentioned, the experience and the intensity they've amped up, it shows that they really have experience. They're not like the flip-floppers from the Attitude Era anymore. I love the end where Jeff did the blind tag when Matt was falling out of the ring and the referee saw it, hit the Swanton, won the match. That was a great exchange. Very un-Hardy-like. It actually had like some logic to it. And it made Jeff seem like he was actually kind of ring savvy, which you never really think about with him. And the fact that he took the time to to get the blind tag while Matt falls out of the ring and actually hits the finisher to win the match, that was a very un-Jeff-like. And you could tell easily that he's kind of learning ring, establishing ring psychology and becoming a very good in-ring worker besides just a flyer. So I really enjoyed that. That was a great ending to a great match. And, solid length. I think it was, right around 16 minutes or so, maybe slightly less, about 15 and a half. Solid opener. So the Hardys win what could be the last match of the feud. I don't think Eminem got anything on them. I think the only win they got was singles when Nitro beat Jeff a while back when he was IC champ. I don't think Eminem ever got a win on these guys. So
I mean, that's fine. The Hardys are the more bankable team. I mean, I know they're trying to build up Nitro, but, and generally Mercury seems to be the one taking the falls anyway in this feud. Nitro right. eats one here, but it seems like Mercury is usually the dum-dum that, that costs the match. But, Claire, did you, having not watched like during this time period, if you were to just drop in here from where you knew the Hardys, what did you think? I mean, I know the development we mentioned, but the star power feel when they come out, like, do they feel more like two big single stars teaming up over just like the Hardy Boys tag team?
I mean, they definitely feel like they are stars. I don't know if they feel more like single stars, because at this point, I think the Hardys are so established. And I mean, at this point, they had left and come back. And this was, I believe, sort of like a reunion tour at the time, which is funny considering they're still going 10 years later right now, and arguably even doing better than they were here. But I'm not quite sure how to answer that question. But they definitely come across as stars, but I think they come across to me as – that's not what stood out to me. I didn't go, oh, my God, this, look at this massive stars that are coming back that are being accepted by these fans. To me, I'm just I was more impressed by their work in the match. I mean, it was basically a Southern-style tag match, which – having not really watched the Hardys since the late 90s, early 2000s, to me, that really is what stood out to me, how much they developed as in-ring workers, how much they no longer needed to rely on the high spots. And when they do whip out the high spots, which they don't even do in this match, really, to speak of, I think it makes that probably so much more effective, considering they don't need to lean on them anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. No, very good. I agree with that. So the Hardys get the win in our only non-title match of the evening. We go backstage often on this show, JR, because, of course, we it is the Royal Rumble, so we have the Tumbler. Who is who's back there with the Tumbler?
Well, Coach and Teddy Long are having some bantering going on in the Rumble drawing room, and Kelly is assisting with the Tumbler. Edge and Randy Orton come in, and after some playful bickering with Kelly, they draw the numbers, and then King Booker comes in to draw as well.
Okay. And we'll have more of that as the evening progresses.
Was Booker's thing at this point that his eyes are always bulging out of his head? I mean, I know they kind of always are, but it seemed more extreme than normal when he walked in.
Yeah, he's always super hot and focused. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
yeah.
Particularly during the King gimmick, he definitely was amping up the eye bulging.
Some intense stuff right there from the book.
Yes. All right. Next up, our first of three straight title matches on this evening: the ECW Championship on the line. Your champion is Mr. Bobby Lashley. Mr. Bobby Lashley, who, of course, won it at December to Dismember, and his opponent this evening, JR, is one of the guys that was in the chamber that night. Give us the lowdown.
On 1-9, Test began protesting that he was not receiving an ECW title match. Later that night, interfered in Lashley's defense against Rob Van Dam, causing a DQ. The next week, Lashley retained his title on a triple threat match against Van Dam and Test, pinning RVD. After the match, Test bashed RVD in the head with the belt, and it was announced that Test would receive a title match on pay-per-view. However, before that, on January 23rd, Lashley defeated Test in a singles match to retain the belt. And sadly, Scott and Mark, this is Test's final WWE pay-per-view appearance as February...
No. And my last Place to Be podcast appearance.
That's
not
it.
If I can't watch Test, I'm not, and my heart's not going to be in it.
I can't blame you. I might just quit. As February dawned, Test vanished from ECW, and Jim Ross later revealed that Test had failed a wellness test and was suspended for 30 days. I don't think you can believe that. Shortly after,
that's why he was called Test.
And the funny thing is, it's almost like he didn't give a shit because, like, what are the odds he was going to get one more run and make this money anyway? So it's probably like a baseball thing where you're like a career minor leaguer, get juiced out of your mind and just try and make some money before you get popped. Like, I feel like that's what happened with Tess. He's like, fuck it. I'm coming in.
Exactly.
I'll get one last run, make some cash, and then just whatever. If I get popped, I get popped. But at least I'll get pushed if I look like a fucking roid monster. Anyway, in August, your debut in TNA... he asked for his release. He was released. In August, he debuted in TNA, remained there until retiring in December. On March 13th, 2009, Andrew Martin was found dead in his apartment, having accidentally overdosed on OxyContin. An autopsy revealed that his brain had suffered recurrent concussions and severe damage, leaving it in an Alzheimer's-like state. Sad ending to Martin's life, another tragic reminder of what was going on in the business at the time. Test's final pay-per-view record. Either of you guys want to render a guess?
Well, I have it open, so I don't know if Claire does. Claire, 32 pay-per-view matches.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say that he was, I bet he won more than we imagine he did. So I'm going to say that he said 32 matches. I'm going to say he's 20 and 12.
Oof. Beat 23
he
and
wishes.
1.
Okay, that theory was completely wrong.
Not a good run. He was 0-6. He participated in every Rumble from 1999 to 2003.
Oh, we're counting Rumbles. Okay, well, all right.
All right. So
not
take
that changes
away.
My prediction at all.
1-2 at WrestleMania, 0-2 at King of the Ring, 2-2 at SummerSlam, 1-2 at Survivor Series, and those pesky other events were costing.
Because in my mind, he was really getting a legitimate push in like the 99 to 2001-ish range. And I don't know. I guess I imagined he would have more pay-per-view wins. But now that I think about it, I can't really remember any.
Well, he was into like those matches with, like, I don't know, like a lot of corporation kind of stuff. Yeah,
he had the
know.
Shane match, which he won, which was really that probably his best match, actually, now that I think about it.
Well, all the TNA shit. Like, I don't know. Did they ever win anything? Like, he had all those matches.
No, I guess not.
No, I guess he won a lot in 01 with the Alliance, and he won a few of those.
Yeah, that's what I was leaning on. But I guess the everything else outweighs it.
Yeah.
What?
8-23-1. Let's see. Where's the one? What was the draw?
Other events. I don't know. You
what was the draw?
Out. You figured that out. I'm going to talk about them.
I ain't looking that up. Go ahead, Claire. He's your favorite guy.
New
so
era.
There you go.
I am not Googling test draw pay-per-view. I am not doing it.
It's probably not that hard if you think about it.
Yeah,
but...
interns for that. Actually, I guess that's pretty easy.
8-23.
Check back in with me later.
8-23-1. Yes, final record.
All right. New era of ECW is underway. Lashley is the torchbearer. Test being shoved up the ladder to provide a heel challenge for the month. And he's a fine enough choice. He's easily beatable, can take a loss, and help Lashley build his resume. ECW is ECW name only at this point, though. What do you guys think? Let's talk about this now, and then we'll get to the match itself. Do you feel like ECW should have just been rebranded at this point? Because I feel like it never really gets...
if they weren't going to make it different, which to me, it doesn't seem like it really was, there's no reason to, if you want to have a third brand for whatever reason, fine, but there's no reason to call this thing that I've seen enough of at this point from this time period, ECW. I mean, there might have been good moments, and but to me, it's just another wrestling show that's not that different than the other wrestling shows at this time. And I think this match becomes an example of that.
And I feel like the fans weren't giving it a chance at the time because of the name. Because it still was ECW, it took a while for people to really come around and accept.
Time out. Oh, wait, never mind. Keep going. I thought I found the information, but I didn't.
Keep it. I thought you were doing Zach Morris on us.
I can tell you that Tess had a draw with CM Punk on ECW TV, but that's not the pay-per-view one. So
in my mind, that's a pay-per-view match anywhere. But no, I think the fans never really gave it a chance because of the name. Like, it took a while before people accepted that, this is actually turning into a pretty good show developmentally. I'm not saying it was at this point, but I feel like the ECW name was hindering it more than helping it. Now, you still have the originals hanging around in the storyline, everything. That goes into the summer. But I feel like at some point, they probably should have just said, okay, you know what, let's just rebrand this thing, and we want the third brand, but the ECW name, I think it's just hurting its appearance. Even though the spirit of the original ECW was kind of alive in this program. It was a mix of young guys and old veterans that were kind of played out looking for a refresh. And they were using it that way. It's just, I think the fans were so conditioned to, we want the ECW guys and style, not the spirit of it. I think that's what hurt. I'm not saying it was a good show at the time, because it was up and down a lot in 07. But what do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, the once the whole Paul thing happened in December and he was gone, and in essence, the WWE brain trust took over the brand, you might as well just redone it. Because you're not... The Extreme Rules thing kind of vanished for the most part, even in 07. And, you know, you started pushing guys that are very un-ECW. I mean, I don't know what you would have called it. WCW? I mean, I don't know. Mid-South?
I mean, what was the idea? They just had so much incredible talent at that point that they just had to have a third brand? Or did they really think they could capitalize on the ECW name while producing a product that had literally nothing to do with ECW besides the fact that it was pro wrestling?
No, I think they really wanted to make it. I think they really wanted to give ECW a shot at first, and then I think Vince just soured on it quickly. I mean,
the pay-per-view was a bad idea.
Yeah, it was dead long before that, though, in Vince's mind. I think the ratings sinking quickly because of the original couple weeks, how they went. It just was what it was. But, I mean, Heyman, you know, if you listen to what he says or just go by his track record and his history, I think he was more interested in making it something like this, actually. Ironically enough, what it becomes after he gets fired. And that is more of a changing, not that he did this, but changing, you know, find the next thing, right? Like, he found the next thing back in 94 with ECW. Like, he was always about, where are we going next? And the rumors always were, if ECW had lasted back in 01, he was going to make it, you know, more of like the ROH kind of pure, you know, slash hybrid UFC style, you know, that kind of style he was edging towards. So he was always looking for the next thing. So in a way, Heyman probably was more in tune with what the, you know, long-term vision was for the brand. They probably should just let him do his thing instead of trying to shoehorn the old school ECW stuff. This is why I still think they shouldn't have even brought back ECW as a brand. They should have made another brand if they wanted one and had Heyman run it with a new name. And hey, Heyman's going to work his magic here now. Something like that, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, that old school ECW was going to have a short shelf life anyway. I mean, let's be honest. The guys that had come back to legitimize that, you know, the Sabus, the Sandmans, the Tommies, RVD was already there. But, you know, Foley wasn't sticking around. That was just for that feud. Even Beulah and those kind of, I mean, they were there for that one, for that, you know, couple month stretch, and then that was it. I mean, that window was going to close fast. I don't know how much longer they could have let that go. Even with Big Show as champion, I don't know how much longer it would have lasted past like SummerSlam anyway, you know? What do you think, Claire?
Like I said, I mean, I wasn't really watching at the time, but to me, and I'm only basing it on the few ECW pay-per-view matches I've seen, it wasn't different enough. It wasn't ECW. It was something else. It wasn't quite like Raw and SmackDown, but I just don't see the purpose of it. I mean, I'm not sure if it was even a moneymaker on the road, if they, you know, made money on the house shows. I mean, in a way, it's almost like what they're doing with NXT right now, only NXT actually does have a completely different feel and does serve a completely different purpose. So to me, that what they're doing now makes sense. It has some kind of logic, whereas this just seemed like another WWE show that's has different wrestlers on it as opposed to a different feeling show.
I think it took a while for fans to get over the ECW name and just accept it for being something different.
Which is why I just shouldn't, if they really want to do this, it just shouldn't have been ECW. It should have been like, I don't know, Wrestle Time.
Wrestle Time.
All right, Test is absurdly juiced, looking gross. A solid pop for Lashley, who's continuing to build his confidence. We get some lockups and some feeling out until Lashley spears Test and rides him down to the mat. Test regains his bearings and lays in elbows and knees in the corner. Lashley comes back with a delayed suplex, and Test bails to regroup. Test catches Lashley on the apron and rams him into the ring post to rattle him and then starts to work the shoulder. Test gets near fall after snapping Lashley's arm across his shoulder and then hooks an armbar. Lashley powers his way back in, uses his good shoulder to bury blows into Test's abs. Test lands a big boot for a near fall, but Lashley spins out of a Death Valley driver attempt and hits a belly-to-belly in a clothesline. Test gets knocked outside again and then just leaves, takes the count-out loss for a very lame finish. Lashley beats down Test after the bell. I thought this was completely stupid. No, why are you protecting Test? Lashley needs these wins, and, I mean, why not have him just finish him off cleanly, get a good hard-fought defense? And even if you have some plans for Test, like, you can't just have another match. You have to be protected here. Like, it's fucking Test. He's 8-22 coming into this. He's 8-22-1 or whatever. Like, we didn't need, you know, he didn't need to not get pinned here to still have some kind of name value. I thought the whole match was plodding. It was a couple of decent spots, but not a good showing for either guy. And Lashley needs better contenders. That's one of the main points there as well. What do you think, Scott?
You pretty much hit all of the steps. Step one, Test. I mean, I don't know. He just looks like just a mound. Like there's, I mean, he's so bloated. He's got a, I mean, for a guy who's juiced, he's got this gigantic, you know, HGH gut hanging out. And
it's like a weird plastic body that they put a talking head on top of.
Exactly.
He's
and the
like
talking head is
a cartoon drawing of like a steroided up wrestler.
Yeah. And the talking head is broken. I mean, it's just, I mean, he's, I'm surprised it took, and I hate to, I don't know how to say this delicately, but I'm surprised he did last another 2 years on this earth because, I mean, he's just crazy right here. Step two, I mean, it was moderately decent. I mean, it was a typical power match. It isn't good for Lashley. He needed some more because he's not a bad worker. I mean, he does have some amateur background. So if he had guys that were more talented, he would have looked a lot better. This was not a good opponent for him because he's not going to do anything. Test can't move. I mean, so he wasn't going to look good either way, regardless of how good he looked in the match. Test can't do anything. So that you've already painted Lashley into a corner that's tough for him to get out of. And again, step three, why are we having a countout ending? I'll get more into this when we do our next match. There was no reason for this. It just made the match even stupider. All right, I just got shoulder blocked. I'm leaving. I mean, it's utterly idiotic. As great as the psychology was in the opener is how bad the psychology was in this match. It's just here's a guy who in the build kept saying, I'm the impact player. I should be the champion. And then he gets, all right, I don't feel like doing this anymore. I'm leaving. This is utterly idiotic. What do you think, Claire?
Hated everything about this. And it totally ties right back into what we were just talking about with ECW not seeming different. If you have to have this match and you cannot possibly consider actually jobbing Test out for whatever reason, I don't know why. I mean, he seems like rather expendable to me. Maybe they had humongous plans for him, although it really doesn't seem like it. For whatever reason, they couldn't just have him lose to Lashley. You're ECW. Why are you having count out finishes to anything? I mean, at least try to sell this extreme brand in some way. If you can't have a finish, have Test hit Lashley with a chair and go too far. And although I even hate the word disqualified being associated with ECW because that was kind of the whole point, but at least make it something vicious, something different, something that gives ECW a, oh my God, I can't believe something this vicious happened. And then you have a story to go from there instead of just Test spends a month demanding a title shot and then runs away from it the second things don't go that well. Just completely terrible from a storytelling perspective. I guess if it was just the first few minutes of a match, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. But the fact that it felt like the first few minutes to a match and then ended with a walking away countout, I mean, I just don't see why this even existed at all. If you didn't want to job Test out, either do a different kind of finish Or give Lashley another opponent. Who cares? Right. Give him anybody and have him crush him, and then we can move on with our lives.
I mean, it should have been a squash. Lashley, I mean, if you're giving Lashley this kind of push, this is the guy he should be eating up just in, like, you know, 30 seconds. Just mow through
either him. Either he should be destroying him, or just don't give him the match if you don't want Test to get destroyed.
Right. Put him in the Rumble. You know, you got an easy place to put him.
Don't do that either.
Who, Lashley?
But yeah. No, but Test. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Lashley.
Yeah,
you could,
put Lashley
you could totally
in the Rumble.
Just, yeah. You could have easily skipped this match, had Lashley go on a huge run in the Rumble.
Right.
I mean, I won't spoil the Rumble we're about to talk about, but there's definitely a role he could have played in there that I think would have done much more for him and had the same result, which is not having a job Test out.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, the match itself is a mess. Especially, and it's not even like Lashley even hits his finisher. And, like, Test bails. Like, he just gets knocked to the floor. He's like, oh, I'm out.
I mean, at least get, like, speared. I don't know what his finisher was at the time. Was it the speared?
Yeah.
Then, too? I mean, yeah. Spear him to the floor, and then he runs away. I mean, right. At least that.
Or he's knocked out and gets counted out. Like, why does he have to even walk off? Just let him get counted out laying there.
There's a million ways to do this that's more interesting and tells a better story as opposed to Test just deciding he's had enough after 7 minutes and walking away.
Right. Stupid.
Very lazy. Stupid.
Yes. So there you go. So Lashley lazy. Retains. What?
He said like LeRae, lazy.
LeRae was the agent for this match, actually.
LeRae.
Oh, I don't know, guys. Just like do some stuff and then Test, you leave.
Oh my God, LeRae.
And then why did we hire this guy again? I worked at a set media place. I heard it was decent.
He was loading the cart one
Anthony
night.
Anthony LaCotta recommended him.
He's putting the taste back on the rack on the shelves, and he looked looked intense.
Hey, he might destroy a bathroom here and there, but otherwise, no problems.
All right, so there we go. Lashley retains the ECW Championship in a pretty putrid match against Test. We go backstage again, right, JR, for more Tumblr action?
Yeah, but first, actually, no, it's not Tumblr action, not the hot Tumblr action. We see the doctor examining John Cena's ribs. Vince comes in and asks Cena if he may forfeit tonight, and says either way, he doesn't see him as champion when the show ends.
Oh, no. No. Which brings us to our next match.
Mm.
Our second title match of the evening, the World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Your champion, as mentioned, Bautista, who, of course, won it back at Survivor Series.
My Bautista!
By God! Against a guy who probably deserves more protecting than friggin' Test. But how do we get here, JR?
We got here on 1-5 when Teddy Long set up a 16-man beat-the-clock challenge with the winner receiving a world title match against Batista at the Rumble. The challenge played out over 2 weeks, and Mr. Kennedy would notch the best time, earning that title shot. On 1-19, his payback for Kennedy costing Undertaker his beat-the-clock match. Long made Kennedy face Taker with the stipulation that if Undertaker won, he would join the Rumble title match. Kennedy would win the match by DQ after Batista got involved and attacked Kennedy. The next week, Kennedy cut a promo in the ring, and during it, Batista showed up, as did Undertaker. Undertaker went to attack Kennedy, but he ducked, and Undertaker wiped out Batista instead. So shenanigans are afoot here. Batista steadying himself on top of SmackDown. Get his legs back under him. Kennedy had a very strong 06 and is back in the main event mix here, having earned this title shot with big win throughout the year and then winning Beat the Clock. Bad chemistry back at the Bash, if you remember, Scott, but both guys have maybe gotten the rust off now, so we'll see if they can turn it up a notch. Batista manhandles Kennedy to start things off. The match spills outside, and Kennedy's able to shove Batista into the stairs and then targets the knee. Back inside, Batista limps through some offense until Kennedy dropkicks the knee to cut him down. Kennedy locks in an inverted figure four until Batista forces a rope break. Kennedy gets his nose busted but keeps hounding the knee, grabbing near falls and going back to submissions. Batista escapes a long half crab, but Kennedy goes right to the knee again. Batista fights back again and hits a spine buster, but the knee keeps him from covering. Batista's up first and mows down Kennedy with clotheslines and then slams him to the mat. The crowd is booing Batista as he follows with a senton roll, but the referee gets bumped and Kennedy gets a low blow and neck breaker for a visual fall. Referee recovers, but Kennedy only gets a near fall on the DDT. Kennedy goes back to the leg immediately as the crowd cheers him on, but Batista cuts him down with a clothesline and a Batista bomb for the win. I thought it was a pretty good match. I think Kennedy actually really carried it, not Batista. Kennedy's offense was focused and on point. He did the little things well, like landing shots at the knee wherever he could. So, like, if Batista was hammering him, he'd land a little punch to the knee, you know, just trying anything he could to work that knee over. I thought Batista sold well, but I think he still looks rigid on offense. He doesn't feel like he's fully back in the swing of things. Ever since that injury, he looks off in his timing on offense. He's a little more lumbering than he had been. Very good showing for Kennedy. He proves he can hang with the big boys. The crowd was into him here, cheering him on over Batista. And I thought this was the surprise of the show. This was pretty good.
Mm. Step one, actually a good spot for both guys, right in the middle, before the other title match that had a little more juice to it, obviously, and that dumpster fire we just watched. So good spot for both guys. Step two, I agree with you about Kennedy. I think he actually carried Batista. I want to say carried. That might be a bit of a stretch, but
no, there is something. Him. I think he 100% carried him.
Yeah, there's something wrong. It's not like Batista came back from the injury in like November. I mean, he's been back since July, so we're not talking, you know, still kind of, you know, tiptoeing to make sure he doesn't, you know, blow his pec out or whatever again, or his tricep. So I don't know what the deal is, but he's holding something back. And it's affecting the matches, particularly against a guy who obviously has gained a hell of a lot of experience facing Taker over a 4-month stretch. So thank God, because I mean, imagine if it was like Batista test. Ooh, good. I don't know if that would have been worse than Lashley test. So good spot here for Kennedy. Really worked Batista over good and kind of helped Batista get through the match because it really seemed like something's wrong. Hopefully when we get to the biggest stage in a couple months, so that vanishes. But, and step three, why didn't they have, if they were going to protect a challenger, this is the spot to do it. You don't have poor Kennedy have to job. Why don't you do the DQ finish here and protect Kennedy and maybe have another title match, you know, down the line between now and No Way Out or whatever.
Neither of these fuckers need to be protected though. I mean, Kennedy has been protected quite a bit throughout. Like he's had a hell of a push. I don't, at the Royal Rumble, your second biggest show of the year, arguably, like, I don't think you need anyone being protected in these title matches.
Right.
Like Kennedy is a young guy on the come up. He's looked really good, but I feel like we don't need him. Like, he can lose to Batista in a world title match, you know what I mean? And, like, be okay. So,
right.
To me, like, I wouldn't have had a DQ in any of these matches. Like, I don't think anyone needs to be protected.
No, you're right. I'm just saying that if the committee needed to stick a DQ somewhere for some dumb reason, if that was on their mind,
sounds like a Vince Russo like authority angle. Well, the yes. Committee decided that you're gonna lose this one, Kennedy. So
yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah, you would. Why would they not have done it here instead of in the match? But you're right. I mean, it's as much as Batista seems to be struggling in ring, he's still Batista. Still has plenty of cred. So losing to him is not the end of the world. You're right about that. Claire, your thoughts on this match?
Much better than I expected. And, you know, as we went over, I don't have a ton of exposure to Kennedy. I don't really get his gimmick at all. I guess his gimmick is just that he announces himself and says his last name twice. I'm not really seeing it, but he seems somewhat over. But like you said, there's no reason to protect this guy. I think he put in a very good performance, though. I mean, like you said, maybe carrying's not the word, but I thought his legwork was pretty good. I had zero expectations for this going in. I kind of figured it would be a Batista squash. I guess it was a pleasant surprise that it wasn't just that. There was actually more of a match to it. Didn't blow me away, but it was the right amount of time. I think it was about 10 minutes or so. Now, if they tried to make a 20-minute epic out of this, I think it would be awful. But they gave us the exact right amount of time, I think, for the two guys they had in there. It was an inoffensive title match that had the right guy going over. I actually thought it could have been, if anything, I think Kennedy got too much offense in. I think this should have been more of a squash. I mean, Batista kind of looked like he got schooled. And to me, Batista's the kind of guy that should just be crushing guys unless someone is so impressive of an athlete that he's actually outmatched. Or someone is so conniving of a heel and such a smart worker that they outclass him. But to me, Kennedy doesn't come across as quite that kind of heel. So, you know, I don't know. I totally fine match, but to me, I don't know. Why shouldn't Batista should be the kind of champion that squashes almost everybody to me.
Yeah, I think in general, I think the thing with Kennedy was I think they did have plans for him, as we'll see in a couple of months. So, I mean, I don't think they wanted him just to get blown out of the water because they wanted to see him as a future title contender, maybe champion on SmackDown. But this is where I disagree with protecting him by DQ. I think the pin is fine because he ate most of the matchup. I mean, he looked great in there. I think it was fine. It reminded me a lot of the Cena Umaga match we saw back at New Year's Revolution, where Umaga dominated the match and got beat with a flash pin. Like,
yeah, I was just thinking that too. Yeah,
like
that's a good
these
point.
Champions, you know, at this point have these lethal finishers. So if you get hit with the Batista bomb, you're done, no matter what you've done. So like, I thought it worked that Kennedy wrestled such a smart match. And I think that's what it was, clear that they positioned it like he worked a real smart match because he kept targeting that knee, and anytime Batista came back, he'd cut him down. So it's not like he overpowered him or outworked him. He found a weakness and took him down and went to town on it. So, you know, he dominated the match, but he didn't dominate Batista, if that makes sense. You know, he found that one point and you know, worked on it with precision.
I guess just knowing what's to come, who Batista's next opponent is going to be, I feel like he shouldn't get this much of a challenge from a guy like Kennedy. But, I mean, I understand they had bigger plans for him, but if you're going to build something more with him, maybe he shouldn't be the one in this match again. Like you said, maybe this should have been Batista test and just have a squash and have Lashley do a great run in the Rumble. Not test, but I feel like it could have been somebody else. Because Batista, you're totally right about, you know, the story involved in the bubble, but in the bigger picture of things, I feel like Batista should just be a monster. Not the kind of guy whose leg you can work over for 8 minutes of a 10-minute match.
But
he should be the kind
Batista
of guy
need
he
to be. Does he need that, though? Like, I feel like he's dominated everything for a year and a half.
I think so. Going into what they have planned for him, I think he should just be almost untouchable, unhurtable. But it's not something I'm too fired up about. So I won't defend him much more. The match is good enough.
I understand. I mean, I understand your point, Claire. I understand your point. I think...
And maybe this is more hindsight, because to me, I know Kennedy didn't turn into anything that was so amazing that we're, you know, there's any reason to talk about it now. You know, maybe they had much bigger plans in mind for him and you know...
Well, at this point, they definitely did. I mean, at this point, they clearly did. And he was... I mean, he was set for a big 07, and things go awry, as we'll get to. But yeah, I think...
Wasn't he supposed to be, like, Vince's son originally? Like, that's why his last name was Kennedy? I feel like I read that somewhere.
That was one of the stories at the time. But they had other stuff planned for him as well. We'll see. So
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
All right. So Batista retains the World Heavyweight Championship in a pretty good match. Could have been better, but not bad, against Mr. Kennedy.
You could be
all
better.
All right, why don't we take a... Yeah, it definitely could have been better.
No, you could be better. You.
What?
You.
God. Why don't we take a break?
Well, you know.
Go have some onion rings. Let us take a break. We have two matches left. Very quick show. Short undercard. Thoughts so far, JR?
No, I think it's been pretty good. Because if you look at what we've had, I mean, I didn't expect Lashley Test to be anything good. I think Batista Kennedy over-delivered. When you look at what we saw back at the Bash, that awful match they had. So, yeah, I think that was better than that. And then the opener was better than you probably would have expected, too, with no gimmicks or, you know, handy-dandies in the mix. It was pretty straightforward. So I would say we've over-delivered so far, and we still have our best matches to come.
Okay.
So you're in, and I think the show's good.
Claire, what do you think?
I would say so far so good. Really strong opener. Yeah, the Lashley test thing was stupid, but it was so quick that as soon as it was over, I stopped caring about it. And then we got a surprisingly decent match, for me anyway, between Batista and Mr. Kennedy here. So no complaints so far, really.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to some Calabria and some words, because...
Where's my friend?
Oh, I can't believe I was literally about to do that.
Calabria.
Sorry, guys.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation is JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's Past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Sayonara, Sox Nation. Cleveland does rock as the Indians have completed their sweep of the Boston Red Sox. And how sweep it is, Scott. Just like how sweep it is at PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have Stephen Riddle's Vintage Vault previewing, continuing his previewing of Punk, and he checked out the whole Royal Rumble match itself. So we'll be talking about that in a few moments. Mm-hmm. We had a new episode of Between the Sheets, number 64, October 5th to 11th of 2001, with Chandler Biggins, the proprietor of AIW. So be sure to check that out. Scott Keith had his smart rant for No Mercy 2016. Of course, that went down last night. We'll be talking about that this week. Clotheslines and headlines. Had a new Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast. We had a new Match of the Week Club, and I guess truly made his debut in that piece there. We had Stephen Graham, Glenn Butler, Peter Saladino, Brad Woodling, Tanner Tiot, Lawrence O'Brien, myself, the Cowboy, and Chad all reviewed The Great War, of course, between the Hardys and the Decay.
Now, well, not what did you not invite on that show?
Well, we get it's not a show, you asshole. It's the Match of the Week Club.
You know what I mean?
It's a written piece.
Sorry.
But it's a great piece, and it's really cool. So if you haven't checked that out yet, you should, because you can be...
I'm too bitter now.
You can be interactive and participate, because what you do is you share your thoughts on our social media outlets or on ProWrestlingOnly.com, and then we'll post those thoughts in next week's column. So check that out. New episode of Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty, looking at the summer of 88. We had a new Seinfeld rewatch, The Little Kicks, Season 8, Episode 4. Of course, that was actually debuted 20 years ago today, so good timing on that. PTBN's main event, Scott, you want to talk about that nonsense?
Yeah, because of the global trumping
warming.
Of...
Oh.
No, the global warming. Warning. The trumping of Skype, we had some issues, but we did have a great segment with myself, Mr. Reisch, Mr. Duncan, Mr. Willie, and Greg Phillips. We talked about TNA. And then I did a quick No Mercy preview because of the technical issues. But it was a pretty good show. So Check it out. Talk a lot about TNA and its possible future.
Can't miss. Stephen Graham had his rankings September 2016. Steve Riddle had his box office report back at September of 2006, 10 years ago. So peep that. And, of course, we had lots of football, baseball, as we always do. New letters from Kayfabe, of course, my favorite podcast out there going today. Be sure to check that out, episode number 5, with a parv and a chap called Alan looking back at the edge of the cheese platter, as they say, of the WWF from the late 80s and early 90s. And Scott, of course, our Vintage World Refresh series continued into October of 93 with our Monday Night Raws. And, of course, all of those are available in free ebooks. You can click the P2B Publications banner on the right-hand side, and you can also find them at Barnes & Noble and many other outlets that have ebooks as well. And they are completely free. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pay-per-views, of science main events, and soon to be these Raws as well. So PlayStation.com. Check out everything that's out there on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlayStation.com/Amazon as well if you're going to be doing your shopping as the holiday season is upon us, and you can help us keep us running there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to San Antonio. One more match here on the undercard. The WWE Championship on the line, our rematch from what was actually a stellar outing at New Year's Revolution between your champion, Mr. John Cena, and his opponent, Umanga. But we have taken another step, JR. Tell us about it.
We have taken another step, sir. And that is on 1-8, John Cena put over his battle with Umaga from the night before, revealed he obtained a concussion in the match, offered Umaga a rematch with Jonathan Coachman, announced that Umaga had the night off. And Cena had to face the Great Khali instead in a non-title match. Umaga and Armando Estrada would get involved in the match, and Umaga hit Cena with a Samoan spike to end the show. The next week, the show opened with a contract signing for the Royal Rumble. Coachman revealed that Estrada would be permitted to choose the stipulation for Umaga and Cena. Estrada chose the last man standing stipulation after both signed the contract. Cena attacked, knocking Umaga down with the steel steps and dropping Estrada through a table. On 122, Vince McMahon forced Coachman into a match with Cena. Before the match happened, Coach ruled that Cena had to face six men in a mini rumble, which was won by Khali. Khali assaulted Cena after the match, allowing Coach to saunter out and attempt to cover Cena. However, Cena kicked out, leading to Umaga charging down and attacking Cena further. Umaga hit the spike again and splashed Cena through a table. And before we get to the match, Claire, I had a question for you. As someone that hadn't been watching at the time, tuning in for this, was Umaga viewed in your eyes as like what level of a threat? Did he seem like a real possible choice here to win the title? Like how serious was he in your mind? Or was he kind of a goofy gimmick?
I don't think he was goofy. I do think they did a really good job. I mean, if you just looked at him coming out the first week, you might say, oh, goofy Samoan gimmick, same old thing. But they portrayed him very well. They really put him over as a total monster. I mean, I saw that just following along with the pay-per-views without having even seen the TV and all the hype packages they always had for him, just show him destroying people. And even the video package for this shows him destroying John Cena. And I had just watched the match from New Year's Resolution, and I think that was such a great match. And you guys raved about it. And it like you mentioned, Cena wins not because he dominated Umaga, not because he got all his stuff in. He couldn't get any of his stuff in. He just caught him with that one flash pin, and that told the perfect story for this match. So I do feel they've really done a good job of making Umaga a serious threat. And it's a very logical stipulation for them to choose for Umaga, because the whole reason that Cena got away last time is because he just caught him. He caught him in a moment. Umaga hit his head. Cena got the pin. It was clear that Umaga was dominant, so it made perfect sense for them to choose this last man standing situation where Cena can't just catch him in a flash pin. He has to destroy him. He has to find a way to beat this monster down. I think they did a great job building it up. Whether I take him seriously as winning the match, that's still tough to say. Especially looking at it in hindsight and knowing how dominant Cena generally was for many years. I don't know if you can say that Umaga was viewed as a threat to really win. But it's really hard to say not being there at the time. But I think they did everything they could do to build him up as close to serious. I think when you get this close to WrestleMania, too, even with a big match that they build up well, when you're at the Royal Rumble, you don't think that Umaga is going into WrestleMania as a champion that's going to get overthrown by whoever wins the Rumble. You just don't see that scenario playing out. So I think sometimes title matches kind of get hampered at the Rumble for that reason, because even when they do a good job building them up, you're thinking forward to WrestleMania, and you're just like, they've done a great job with Umaga, but he's probably not the main event of WrestleMania. So only for that reason, I would say you kind of feel like there's no way Cena's not going to win. But in a bubble, in the context of how they built this specific match, I think they made Umaga a very believable threat, and it really did wonders to build to this match and all of that storyline that playing up who Cena could really not get one over on this guy almost the whole time, even when he did come across well on TV. Like you said, it was just you know, he only got it in on what's his freaking manager's name?
Estrada.
It always throws me off because he's this, like, you know, Latino manager name with Umaga. So I'm expecting that Kim Chi or something to be his manager.
Eric Estrada.
But not that would make sense either. But since Kim Chi was after
Punch,
you know what I'm saying. But no, within the context of this, I think they did about as good a job as they could ever do building somebody up as a legitimate threat against John Cena.
All right, good job, Potts. Rematch lined up after really
inside joke number 17. Hope you guys are enjoying this.
Rematch lined up after a really good match in New Year's Revolution. Now a strong Stipe added as well. Umaga still booked like a monster. Feels very strong here. Cena comes out firing off the bell, but Umaga lands one hard blow to the taped ribs and sends him to the floor, writhing in pain. Umaga follows him out, slings him into the stairs, and then punches him down the aisle. Back in the ring, Umaga keeps pounding Cena, cutting him down with stiff clotheslines, and gets a 7 count. Umaga gets outside and pulls apart the steps, but Cena cuts him off and chucks them from the ring into Umaga on the floor for the count, but Umaga survives. Cena's momentum is cut right off in the ring by Umaga's spin kick. Umaga grabs a bear hug and then goes to fetch the steps again. Umaga hammers away with punches and puts Cena up against the stairs in the corner, but comes up empty on the charge and slams hard into the stairs. Cena grabs the stairs and bashes Umaga with them for 7. Good stair shots tonight. I thought they didn't look fake, because that's one of my like least favorite weapons usages is the stairs.
Well, you didn't like the Big Show Rowan stairs match from TLC 014? 014.
014. They always look like shit. I hate when they always look like crap. But tonight, I thought they looked pretty good. They were getting them flush. Cena gets caught coming off the top, and Umaga plants him with a spinning sidewalk slam. Cena lands a low blow and bulldogs Umaga on the stairs, and then drops him with a spinning slam. Cena tries for an FU, but falls forward and hits his head on the steps and is busted open. Umaga hammers away viciously at the cut, but Cena stands tall until Umaga crushes him with a Samoan drop. Cena blocks the spike, but Umaga headbutts him down. Umaga puts Cena on the top, but Cena shoves him off and dives onto him and then slings him through the buckles and into the post. And then in a really great spot, Cena goes outside and grabs the monitor and then just bashes Umaga on the head with it. Umaga rolls outside and Cena leaps at him, but Umaga catches him and throws him into the post. Umaga lays Cena on the announce table and runs across the other ones for the splash, but Cena dodges it and he goes crashing through the table. Umaga's up at a 9 count and then comes in and wipes out Cena. Armando unscrews the turnbuckle in the corner and then directs Umaga to use the metal bar, but Cena ducks him and hits the FU and then slugs Estrada. Cena smacks Umaga with the metal piece and then hooks the STFU while using the ring rope to choke out Umaga. Of course, the rope had been loosened. It was now hanging loose, and he used it to choke him. Umaga passes out after surviving for a while, and Cena gets the win. I thought this was fantastic. Easy 5-star match in my mind. Great brawling, innovative offense. Umaga is tremendous. I thought his timing was excellent. His high-impact offense is fantastic. He plays the character perfectly, and Cena's selling was on point. His comebacks were good. He did a nasty blade job. The finish protected Umaga again because he takes a shit-kicking and gets choked out with a rope. Cena was lucky twice as Umaga dominated but couldn't finish. I thought it was an all-time classic. It's a Cena Pantheon match. I think it's the best match we've seen in this calendar year. And maybe arguably the best Rumble title match of all time, too. I mean, your mileage may vary there. But I thought this was really surprising, and I don't think Cena was carrying this match at all. I think Umaga had plenty to do with how good this match was. His offense was so, so crisp, and we've seen that 2 months in a row now. Scott, what did you think?
I like your analysis of Cena. I'm gonna tweak it a bit, but I like it a lot. Step one, even with Cena winning clean at New Year's Revolution, it was booked superbly that he kind of stole it and really didn't earn it, according to Estrada. So they did a great job of kind of not tainting the win at New Year's Revolution, but making people skeptical that Cena really beat him. So a great way to add the rematch here and the Stipe as well. Step two. This is probably his first legit beatdown, you know, because most of the guys that Cena's faced in his title run since, you know, since WrestleMania 21 really hasn't faced anybody as big as Umaga, maybe JBL in that one match. Other than that, it's been, you know, Edge and you know, RVD and getting, you know, Kurt and Jericho, guys that are close to his size. But now, for the first time on a big stage, he was facing really a guy that could just bludgeon him. So excellent job by Umaga. Very creative offense, and really gave Cena a legitimately needed shit-kicking in the sense that the way the match was booked at the back end, Cena had to come out like just a warrior, and that's going to lead me to step three, which was this was a legitimizer for Cena. Like you said, this is a Pantheon match for him because I'm not going to say he carried Umaga. He didn't, but what I'm saying is Cena, after a year and a half, has gained a lot of main event experience. Well, you know, Umaga didn't. So Cena did a tremendous job of not only putting over Umaga's offense, but really kind of dictated the storytelling and the psychology throughout the match to help to kind of get Umaga to the spots he needed to get. Cena, I have to say, and considering the reign is only, you know, he's only been main event for, you know, barely 2 years. He has really gained an incredible grasp of how to really storytell. I mean, he's not at like Taker Shawn Michaels storytelling level yet, but for a guy who's been a main eventer barely 2 years, he really knew how to help Umaga get through the match with his offense, and then Cena was able to kind of fill his gaps with his offense. I thought the monitor shot was great. I mean, it took him taking the ring rope.
I disagree. I don't think Cena's walking through it all. I think we have two examples of great matches where Umaga, I thought he more than held up his end of the bargain. Like, he dominated the offense in like in 85% of the match at the Revolution and like 70% here. And it didn't feel like to me like Cena was walking him through it. Like, I thought Umaga was carrying some of the action at times because his comebacks and his cutoffs were so awesome. Like, anytime Cena had any glimmer of hope in either of these matches, Umaga hit some kind of crisp offensive strike to cut him down. And, like, he just looked so unstoppable. And Cena was great. His selling was perfect. But Umaga, to me, gets complete and utter credit for his performance. Like, I don't think Cena was cueing him or setting him up. I thought it was just two guys that had fantastic chemistry, had complete dichotomy in characters that played well, and had the right kind of build. Cena's been a dominant champion. Umaga's been a dominant heel. It was perfect. I mean, it was really well done. It was straight out of the Hogan playbook in my mind, just with more brawling and a better work rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll say this. I think, obviously, they weren't going to do a last man standing if they didn't have a first match. But Umaga definitely proved at New Year's Revolution that he could go with Cena, you know, move for move. But I do think that Cena showed his veteranship at such a young age by really taking the beating and kind of making Umaga look even stronger. I'm not saying, again, I mean, I don't want to say he wasn't carrying him. I'm just saying that the story was laid out so well, and Umaga did a great job of really giving Cena the business and having Cena adapt to a beating that he against a guy that he normally doesn't face. And I think that worked out perfectly. And I thought the match was over on that crazy table shot. But I don't think they wanted to make Umaga look dumb by like going for a stupid move and then knocking himself out of the match. But he had to take the ring rope and gag it and pretty much, you know, I mean, that's crazy to take the ring rope and pretty much choke him to unconsciousness. Great way of I don't want to say making Cena seem desperate, but to the point where he had to actually take the rope and choke the guy out was a tremendous move to put Cena in that position. And Umaga as well, because you even still made Umaga strong. Yes, he's lost two matches now to Cena, but one was a fluke, or was booked as a fluke. And two, he didn't just, you know, pass out to the shitty STF. He actually, you know, was pretty much choked out. So let's be honest. Fantastic match. As for best Rumble match, well, you've got two others that come close, and that's, of course, Triple H, Foley, and Benoit Kurt. Maybe if you watch these matches three in a row, you could get a final resolution, no TNA pun intended there, on what could be the best of those three matches. Claire, your thoughts?
Well, what you just proposed there right there is a pretty tough one because they're, well, a Triple H Mick is a different kind of match, but not as different. But Benoit Angle is a completely different kind of match. But those probably are the three that you have to look at if we're talking about best title match. But as much as I'd love to be a contrarian, I mean, you guys pretty much summed it up. This is really, you know, I could probably never, as long as I live, see as much wrestling as, say, Chad Campbell, Stephen Graham, Parv. But I'm pretty sure all three of those guys, I could be wrong, rank this match in their top 100. And these guys have seen, like, hundreds of thousands of hours more wrestling than I have. So, I mean, I can't imagine not having this in a top 100 of my own. It is really just a phenomenal match on every level. And you mentioned how this match is kind of straight out of the Hogan playbook. And it is in terms of formula. But my God, have you ever seen a Hulk Hogan match this well worked? I mean, with this much intensity, this much viciousness.
It's the evolutionary Hogan style match.
It's the best that formula of match could ever possibly be.
Right.
It's just, and I think you got a great point giving Umaga so much credit for his timing. I mean, every time something vicious happened to Umaga, you think Cena's finally turned the corner. Like, he throws the giant steel steps at him, and it just takes him out altogether, and you think, okay, this is the part, this is the turning point in the match where Cena's got it. Nope, it never happened. I mean, it did happen at the end, but there was never a point where Cena finally had this thing in the bag, finally regained control until the very, very bitter end. And Scott, what you said there, you said you didn't want it to sound like it made Cena seem desperate, but I think that's kind of the point. He was so desperate, his normal stuff could never work. A regular ass shitty Cena SCF that Steve Austin always bitches about not being snug enough, that would never look effective in this environment. But the way that they upped the ante, and the way that he, not only just using the ring rope, because I think, I mean, that's more violent than I think the WWE would even show today. Someone literally getting choked to the point of passing out by a rope. I think that's like off the PG scale, but we weren't quite into that PG era at this point, as you can also see by the blood early in the match, which really we barely touched on, but that blood also helped build that story even more so. And it really showed Cena having to resort to a level in a more vicious place than we'd ever seen him go before up to that point. I think previously he'd won every match as a wrestler by defeating his opponent, by finally hitting the FU, by finally getting on the STF. This was a totally different thing. This is where he had to go to a different place. He had to find
I'd say the closest one is probably the JBL. Like, he kind of did
that. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that, but that actually blows my argument away. But you know what I'm saying? It's the same idea.
You can modify your argument. He digs down in these big time matches,
I almost forgot about that match, because that is the other Cena match from this kind of era, 05 to 08 or so, that really does stand out as it's similar in some ways, but only similar in the progression of John Cena having to reach to a new level, to a place that other people haven't pushed him. And I don't think you can compare JBL to Umaga as an opponent, but there is a very good similarity there that you point out in the way that Cena really had to do something different, to really define a new level of viciousness, which is inside this guy who's normally the squeaky clean, happy-go-lucky, I'm going to win matches, I'm the best guy, I've got pride, hustle, loyalty, respect. Well, that goes out the window sometimes when the opponent becomes so overbearing, in the case of Umaga, or in the case of JBL, where the hatred, I think it was a little bit of a different case with JBL, whereas Cena had to do this, had to reach to this level to defeat Umaga, who was too much of a monster, whereas JBL had really pushed Cena to a level of hatred that was more of a vicious hatred, I feel like, in that match, whereas this was just pure desperation, where he had to pull out stops that he never thought he could pull out before to defeat this very well-built-up monster, even not only just long-term, but even in the context of this match, where no matter what Cena did, throwing the stairs at him, trying to FU him on the stairs, he just got cut off at every single moment, and that just really helped the finish even more. Just, I mean, like you guys said, it's a five-star match. It's one of the best, honestly, at this point, I think, I don't know, top 50 WWE match of all time, period. Is that going too far? I don't know.
I think it's going too far.
One of the best matches I've seen in my life.
It depends how many.
Of this kind of level.
First, in the JBL thing, too, there's a lot more pathos in that match than we get here, too. I mean, that's a big difference as well. That helps things out. Or at least makes this one different. Like, this one had no drama. Like, no dramatic BS to it. You know what I mean? Not that match had a ton, but there's more of that playing out with JBL begging off and all that shit. Like, this was just balls to the wall.
And JBL taunting Cena was a lot more of an aspect of that match, whereas this is more Cena just getting destroyed is what drives him.
Yeah. But no, I think it's, I mean, depends how many five-star matches you think there are in WWF history, right? I mean, that's the answer. If it's a top 50 or a top whatever. I mean, to me, it's on the list of five-star WWF matches.
because I think it was perfect. I don't think you could have done anything differently to make this match any better than what
and
they did.
Easily one of the top 10 of the 2000s. And I don't think it's even questionable.
Oh, yeah.
No, easily. Yep.
I think Chad may have a number one, I think, of the decade. I think it's better than Triple H Cena. I mean, Triple H Cactus. I'm not just busting you up, Scott. I just think the match itself, I think there's less meandering than there was in that match.
I might try this project out tonight and watch those other two matches because I love all three, but they're so different. I really am curious to see how I'd feel watching them all at once.
Right, and we're really nitpicking on these. But to me, the Triple H Cactus, you have the stuff with The Rock in there that kind of took away from it. You get none of this. You get none of that in this match. You know, Triple H Cactus didn't have the stakes of Cactus's retirement yet, so you can't really prop it up on that. It was kind of a coming out party for Triple H and for Umaga. I think they're pretty even. I think this one was just a little bit tighter. I think that one had a little bit more meandering in it.
Yeah, that one also was the victim of the era. I mean, the Attitude Era title matches had to have all this extra shit that at times probably wasn't needed. That could have been tighter, and the Rock run-in was always unnecessary, in my opinion.
How long is that match? This one's 23 minutes. How long?
That's like 20, about the same, maybe 22 change. Here, I'll double check.
It's an interesting parallel because that Cactus Jack Triple H match was all about how far will Triple H go to destroy this guy who won't give up,
right?
And then this match is about how far will Cena go to take this guy out that he just cannot possibly defeat. It's kind of the flip side of a similar story in some ways, only coming from different directions. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and Kurt Benoit was 1948.
Yeah, and I think this beats that just because of the that's such a good pure wrestling match, but it does start off a little slow. I thought this clicked from the minute it started. So if I had to rank them, I would put this one, Triple H Cactus 2, and then Benoit Kurt 3. And it's all a very tight 1-2-3. I mean, we're talking like fractions of a snowflake. You know what I mean? Like it's
yeah, exactly.
It's just, I thought this match was so crisp and so well executed and just so out of nowhere. I mean, as good as the match at New Year's Revolution was, I don't know. I thought this one just. I don't think anyone expected this classic to come out of this, especially with a stip that hadn't had. When's the last really good last minute stand we had? Jericho Triple H? Have we even had one since? I know they've become more in vogue lately. I don't know if we've had a pay per view one in between, but anyway, it's a stip that didn't have a lot of cred behind it that you knew, like, oh, this will be awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and then for me, in my opinion, what happens is by like 2013, this stip specifically gets beaten into the ground.
Right, right.
I think there's some years we've had like three last man standings. It gets killed, but yeah, at this point, very rare.
I can't really think of another great last man standing match. I mean,
well, Triple H and Jericho from Fully Loaded 2000 is pretty good.
It's okay.
That's not really, not as violent.
Well, I would say that's I would say that's really good. I wouldn't say great.
Yeah, but that's probably the next.
Don't even get me started on Triple H Shawn Michaels.
No. Kane Jericho from the one from Rumble. No, that's not
45-minute one. Yeah.
Oh, we haven't talked. That's right. So that was probably the last one I've seen Rumble before.
Well, that wasn't the 40-minute one. That was that was Hell in a Cell.
Talking about how long it felt.
Oh, it did feel. Well, it was like, it was like 27, so it was pretty close.
And then they upped the ante by doing the Cell one and actually making it 45.
Actually making it 47.
There's one later in 07 that's pretty good, but I don't think anything. This is, to me, probably the greatest last minute match of all time. But no, legacy wise, it's great. We'll talk about where it ranks for the year later on, but it's a classic. I mean, it's a real classic. Yeah.
No, it really is.
So, Scott, we didn't go backstage earlier. We forgot. But Kevin Thorne, this is before the Cena match. Kevin Thorne and Ariel got sexy as they drew the number. His little bastard comes in and stands on a chair to pick his number. Coach makes a midget joke, and Bastard attacks him, biting his ear and then kneeing him in the nuts. And then Bastard runs into Kali. We get the fun visual of the two of them looking at each other. Kali picks up a handful of balls, and Coach tells him to take just one, so he just drops the other two and walks off. Kelly picks up the ones he dropped and says they are the biggest balls she's ever held. And that leads to Ron Simmons coming in and doing a damn. And then we head backstage again after that title match. Sandman comes in to draw his number and then chugs a beer and leaves and canes himself on the way out. And then Ric Flair comes in to pull the last ball as Kelly flirts with him. And then Layla and Brooke come in as well as stream expose and they all dance for Flair.
Yes. So John Cena, right before that,
I used to really love these like picking the number segments. I mean, back in the day, like in the late 80s, early 90s, because they often played a role in the story of the Rumble. Right. And these just seemed like total throwaways to me. I guess the only one that did play upon stories, I'm not sure if we even got to it yet, but it was the Edge Orton one. But I mean, they kind of annoyed me because there were so many of them and they all seemed really meaningless to me.
They're just Phil. Really just entertaining Phil.
I know, but you could have Phil right. and be like minorly creative and still play into a storyline of some kind. I mean, I guess they kind of did in some ways, but I miss the days when, you know, you'd have Ted DiBiase buying a pick from somebody and that kind of thing, and managers alluding to trades, and just that the storyline aspect of it seemed out the window here. It was just like,
right.
Hey, remember this guy? He's picking a number. Moving along. Nitpicking.
All right. Well, John Cena, as mentioned, retains his WWE Championship. So all three champions, Bobby Lashley, Batista, and John Cena, keep their belts. One of these guys is going to face somebody from our last match on April 1st in Motown. Who will that be? Well, here we go. The Royal Rumble match. We've got a bunch of fun facts. Well, no, we don't have a bunch.
I think it's a record low for the Rumble.
I know it is a record low, only three, but you can. Well, we'll do them as we go along. So
I'll just do them.
Or do you want to do them now?
Yeah.
You want to do them now?
Okay, go. This is Kenny Dykstra's final pay-per-view appearance until last night.
pretty much.
Despite the promise showed during a sweep of Ric Flair to start the year, Kenny's star quickly burnt out and became a fixture on Heat as the year went along. In June, he was drafted to SmackDown, and he would form a relationship with Victoria upon arriving. He would bounce around for the rest of the year as 2008 dawned. He took a leave of absence from TV. He returned to SmackDown in August, but his stay was short-lived as he was released on November 10th. Upon leaving WWE, he would work the indie circuit under his real name. In late 2001, he received tryout matches, but as of the time, he had yet to resign. He was 2-3, and of course, he's been doing one-off shots here for a bit now as well. Also, Super Crazy's final appearance remains with Raw throughout the end of 2007, working the lower mid-card before reforming his team with Jim Duggan late in the year. In 2008, he was drafted to ECW, remained there until requesting his release in November of 2008. So he lasts for another 2 years. Upon leaving WWE, Crazy returned to the Indies, mainly working Mexico, South America, and Puerto Rico, where he continues to do today. His final pay-per-view record is 1-7. His only win coming at the Bash 05. And finally, following the show, Chris Masters continued to compete on Raw. In April, Bobby Lashley finally broke the Master Lock. After being drafted to SmackDown in June, Masters was suspended 30 days for a wellness policy violation. In October, he returned to TV but was quickly sidelined with a dislocated elbow. While he was recovering, it was announced he failed another test. This time, got a 60-day suspension. It was never fulfilled as he was released right after. Took the worldwide indie circuit working in Japan and Australia. And he would eventually return to WWE, which we'll cover. But this is his final pay-per-view appearance of this run. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So we got Michael Cole, JBL, and King on the call this year. So mixing things up a bit.
They did a good job.
And of course, Scott's a bitty bit boy. Ric Flair enters in at number one.
Was he number one in 93, too? Or was he two
yes,
in 93?
No, he was number one. Yep.
Okay.
So second time. Then they call it. Cole talks about the whole history of him.
Why did he seem so happy after he pulled his number?
Because he loves it. He doesn't care. He's the 60-minute man, baby. He did it before.
Yeah, and he was dancing with some hoos. So there you go.
Okay. Of course, in 92.
I'll buy that.
And 92 answered number 3, 93 answered number 1, and Cole talks about all that. We get Finley in at number 2. We get a really fun old-school match to kick things off. Kind of a low-level dream match on some levels. We get some stiff strikes to fill up the segment until Kenny comes out at number 3. Flair goes right at little Kenny, lighting him up with chops until Finley knocks him down. All three survive, teases until Matt Hardy is in at number 4. Hardy goes right at little Kenny. As Flair and Finley keep laying into each other, we get Edge out at number 5. Matt meets him with a twist of fate, and Cole calls out their heated past. So that feud is back on. Flair goes outside and grabs a pair of chairs, but Kenny catches him coming back in and knocks the chairs outside. Edge and Kenny toss Flair out to loud boos, and then Edge double-crosses and throws out Kenny as well in a funny bit. And, of course, we talked about RKO and Kenny's union back earlier in last week's show. Were you surprised that Flair went out this early, guys?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the back end of this list is pretty loaded when you get to it, but
I didn't think he'd go 60 minutes again, but you know, you thought he'd keep him in there till maybe mid-match.
Right. All right. So there's that.
Kenny and Edge had a ring.
Had a big team. Big plan. Tommy Dreamer in at number 6. We get some basic fighting and teases. Edge and Hardy still going at it. Sabu is in at number 7. And that was kind of surreal seeing guys like him in the Rumble. Like, I don't know. I don't think you see Sabu in a Royal Rumble. Sabu sets up a table at ringside and slides in and goes at it with Dreamer. Gregory Helms enters at number 8. 1 year anniversary as Cruiserweight champ, as JBL notes. Helms goes right at Hardy to reignite their rivalry as Sabu almost shoves out Finley. Shelton Benjamin's in at number 9 as the ring starts to fill up. And more basic Rumble brawling as, of course, we get to number 10. We're a third of the way through the match. Of course,
yes.
Kane comes in. And what did you guys think a third of the way here? Kane comes in, he's dominating things, throws out Dreamer, and then chokeslams Sabu through the table to eliminate him. So any early thoughts?
I thought it was a nice mid-match spot, you know, a nice little table chokeslam. Kane's there to clean out some of the dead wood from that first section of the match. I thought it was a... very Rumble-esque, if you will, only adding that extreme element to remind everyone that we do have that third brand, although it's kind of funny that this one chokeslam through the table is 100 times more extreme than anything we saw in the ECW championship match.
Obviously, the only guy that's probably one of the big favorites early on was Edge, but then as you're trying to do the math, you're like, are they going to do Edge Cena again? Edge Batista. So early on, I don't think you really saw any bona fide favorites.
What makes you think he wouldn't choose to face Lashley for the ECW title? Edge Lashley? That'd be a fresh one.
You're quite true. You're quite right. That's possible. But other than that, cool. A lot of just bodies early on.
This much is true. Is true. Kane dominates, like we said. CM Punk in at number 11 goes right at Edge, and they battle the whole segment until number 12. King Booker in at number 12. JBL bitches that Booker never got his one-on-one rematch with Batista. Booker tosses Helms immediately. Super crazy in at 13. We now have 8 guys in the ring as the brawling continues. Get more teases. Jeff Hardy's out at number 14. He's limping to the ring. Jeff goes at Finley. Matt comes to help him, and they pair up and attack and double-team guys around the ring. Sandman's in at number 15 to bring us halfway through. Does his full entrance coming through the crowd. I thought that was pretty fun. Again, kind of surreal seeing a guy like Sandman in the Rumble. Comes in, starts tossing Kane shots, but Booker chucks him right out. Orton's in at 16, and him and Edge get right to work, throwing out Super Crazy, Jeff, and Matt. So Edge again, I guess the last laugh on poor Matt. Hardy's had a good showing, but RKO has just been dominant. I thought it was smart to let them take the match over. They've been talking about it. They teased it earlier, like you said, Mark. So there's a lot going on with RKO. They're clearly going to be big players in this Rumble, and they get off to a really hot start. Benoit enters at number 17. Him and Finley lay right into each other. Benoit unleashes Germans across the ring and then goes back to fighting Finley as RVD is in at 18. JBL notes that there are 6 former world champions in the ring at this point. Kane dumps Booker and he can't believe it and then comes back in and hits Booker with a sidekick and a scissors kick and eliminates him. So then Booker beats on Kane around the ring as Viscera is out at 19. Viscera's gear is like absurdly wonderful. Kid. Just unbelievable looking. We get some meandering on the ring until Johnny Nitro's out at number 20. We get some teases and the punches roll on. Kevin Thorne is in at 21. Shelton gets a nice survival spot, barely hanging on. RVD tries to knock Vis out but fails. Hardcore Holly is in at number 22. He slugs away at Nitro. The ring is filled back up and everyone starts to team up on Vis, trying to shove him out. Shawn Michaels in at 23 to a huge hometown pop. He has a mini match with Finley, which is, again, another pretty cool pairing. And they eventually knock him out to the floor. Vis survives the attack, but Michaels nails him with Sweet Chin Music, and then everyone teams up and shoves him out. Shelton charges, but Shawn ducks and tosses him. And then Chris Masters is in at 24 as RKO starts to double-team. Shawn Michaels. Benoit shoves out Nitro as he's on the middle rope. Chavo Guerrero's in at 25, still bland and boring as shit. Benoit, I hate him so much. Benoit eliminates Thorne and then goes at Holly as everyone keeps pairing off and fighting. MVP enters at 26. JBL is a huge fan and proponent of him now after the last couple months. RVD dropkicks Masters out in an awkward elimination. As Cole notes that RVD has been in the final 6 of every Rumble he's ever been in. Carlito's in at number 27. Cole points out that four men have won from number 27. RVD almost eliminates Michaels, and Chavo helps to try and push Sean out. Kali is in at 28 and knocks down RKO as he enters. He then cuts down a bunch of guys with headbutts and chops and stands above the carnage and then begins to clean house. Chucking out Benoit, RVD, and Holly. Miz is in at 29. He gets tossed right out by Kali for a close to record time. And, of course, as they say, Warlord, I think, was always officially the shortest. But
yes. Yeah, they did mention Warlord.
Miz comes close here. So, Kali also tosses Punk, Carlito, and Chavo in a crazy showing that I thought made a lot of sense as they try to reestablish him. Mm-hmm. Kali's perfect for the setting. Looks unstoppable. Michaels tries to chop away at Kali, but gets spiked for the tree slam. Undertaker closes things out at number 30 for a massive pop. Taker goes right at Kali as their feud flares back up. Kali and Taker trade blows until Taker hammers Kali and clotheslines him out. We get down to the final five. That's Taker, Michaels, MVP, Edge, and Orton. Really solid group. Taker tosses MVP, and we have four very legit options left. And when you look at this final four, Taker, Michaels, Edge, and Orton, what did you think of the way it stacked up? And is this arguably the greatest final four in Rumble history?
I think it's the best final. Well, I don't know. I mean, perfect Austin, Angle, and Triple H in 02 is pretty good last four. Pretty close. But this is the best one where you had four guys all who could win. Like 02, I don't think you really thought Perfect was going to win.
Final four, you had the Austin, Bret Hart, Undertaker, Vader one. That's a pretty good final four.
That's pretty good, too, yeah.
This is close.
Actually, I think Fake Diesel was one of the last four. He just wasn't thrown out by Austin, wasn't he?
Oh, right, because that was the thing. It was they brought back the people that Austin threw out. Right. So maybe they weren't technically final four. Okay.
Yeah.
Technicality.
I thought Orton was winning at this point. When we got to this point in the match, I thought Orton was winning.
So I'm curious, what were you guys, before this Rumble happened, what would you guys have thought would be the two WrestleMania matches? Because for me, I wasn't watching at the time, so it's hard for me to think what they would have been. But I'm kind of curious from people watching then, what you would have projected as those WrestleMania title matches before knowing the result of this Rumble.
I think it's tough to say because I think everyone knew. I think it was like pretty obvious. Like, I think it was known what it was going to be. Of course, Triple H Cena was supposed to be the match.
Because they had already alluded some Undertaker Batista stuff before this, which I think was, in retrospect, maybe a mistake because it kind of gave that match away.
Right. Well, the only question would be is if Taker's going to win the Rumble or does Michaels win the Rumble and then Taker.
It was more how they get there than right. who's going to be.
Yeah, I think we knew one of the two guys would win because we knew what the two title matches were. I mean, I guess Orton was like an outside shot. You know, I don't think Edge was much of a chance. I think Orton was like the dark horse of the three. So Orton grabs a chair, pace Taker with it. We get some dissension between RKO, but Orton lands an RKO on HBK, knocking him to the floor under the bottom rope. RKO gets their shit together and double teams the bleeding Taker. Taker fights them off and drops Edge with the snake eyes, but Edge recovers with a spear to break up the chokeslam on Orton. Edge bashes Taker with a chair, but before they can sort things out, Michaels comes in and quickly tosses both Edge and Orton to big pops. That was a really nice spot there. And it's a great choice to close things out. These two legends haven't crossed paths in 10 years now after they had their awesome feud in late 97. The tone is set with both guys laid out. Taker sits up and Michaels nips up. Michaels is aggressive in his attack, slugging away and not relenting at all as Taker tries to push him off. Taker slugs Michaels and he lands on the top rope but hangs on and survives. The fight continues with some teases and strikes and the crowd is just rabid for everything. Taker ends up on the edge of the apron but survives a Michaels punch. Fights his way back into the ring. Michaels gets a swinging neck breaker, but Taker comes back and hoists Michael onto the apron. Michaels hangs on and ends up on the top rope where Taker meets him. They struggle back and forth up there, teasing eliminations until Michaels knocks Taker to the mat and hits an elbow drop. Michaels gets energized and fires up the crowd as he tunes the band, but Taker blocks Sweet Chin Music and hits the choke slam. Taker hoists Michaels up, but he slips free off the shoulder and hits Sweet Chin Music. Both guys are slow to get up. Michaels goes for Sweet Chin Music again, but Taker sidesteps, hoists Michaels up, and throws him out of the ring to win the Rumble for the first time. He's also the first number 30 to win of all time. Michaels and Taker have excellent chemistry. It was a treat for us to get a singles match, 10 minutes, pretty much to cap off the Rumble. Good teases. Michaels gets his hometown pop, but Taker gets the win due to move on to a marquee Mania title match. Great showing for Rated RKO. They continue to be booked strongly. I think this was a great Rumble. It's a great show overall. And I liked everything about it, pretty much. I didn't think there were any real dead spots or anything you really shake your head over. What'd you think, Mr. Clare?
Yeah, very good Rumble, and as we just talked about, extremely strong Final Four. I thought they told a really good story with that last, really, 10 minutes of the match or so between Rated RKO being in there with Michaels and Taker. I like how they teamed up, and I like how they had them tease the Dissension and then go back at teaming up. I thought that was a nice tease, but not going all the way with breaking them up in the middle of the match. I think there's no reason to do that there. And I really did love the spot where Orton and Edge were kind of arguing, and then Michaels comes in, and Orton just RKOs him and then pushes him out of the ring, like, we'll get rid of you for a few minutes here. And then I love that you get basically treated to a five-minute Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels match at the end. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like a bonus. I like when the Royal Rumble, and it's kind of rare actually, ends with a really sort of a marquee matchup that goes for some amount of time, that goes for more than 30 seconds. I think
we haven't had many
rare.
Of them. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been.
No,
many.
Not at all. Like, I don't, I'm trying to think. I mean, how long did...
I think Hogan... Look at it. Well, I think Hogan or Earthquake in 91 went for a few minutes.
Yeah. What about, like, Bret Hart, Lex Luger? Did that go for long? That was kind of, like, a big thing at the time.
Not
way,
for
but,
super
but
long.
No,
really.
Not that long. I don't think they went that long.
And this felt so much more epic because of how established these guys are as legends. Because they already had a great feud 10 years ago, but it was 10 years ago. So it's so long ago that it really was a huge deal. And even watching it back, you know, yesterday, it felt like a big deal again, seeing right. these two guys square off and have that epic confrontation. It also says a lot. I mean, who's to say how long term they were thinking now, but this really was the beginning of that second late 2000s Undertaker Shawn Michaels feud, which didn't really even start until 2 years later with their matches. But this was the beginning of laying that groundwork. And I think they revisited it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, I don't want to spoil, because I know you guys act like things haven't happened yet. So I'll just stop. But I do like that they kind of start what turns into a very right. epic, very epic multi-year feud, even longer if you include the Triple H aspect of it. So, I mean, this is almost the start of, like, a six-year storyline.
It really is, and it's a whole new generation of fans, this feud. I mean, the feud before has had complete turnover in the roster, guys in complete different positions. Undertaker is kind of that, you know, legendary veteran guy now, and Michaels is, you know, completely different than he was at that point, the heel prick, and now he's the beloved face.
Couldn't be more different than the character 10 years earlier.
Right, 100% different.
So, both of them, kind of, in a way.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, it's a whole new feud in many ways, but as like you mentioned, it doesn't kickstart right away, but it was such a nice treat. And, yeah, I don't remember many of the Rumbles that had this stretch at the end of them. Rock and Big Show, maybe. I mean, Shawn and Bulldog, maybe. Like, I don't... There hasn't been many that went like this. What'd you think, Scott?
Yeah, and the first two-thirds of the Royal Rumble match itself weren't spectacular, but the last third was so strong, and none of it was bad.
Right.
So if you combine that with all the matches previous, the only dud of which being Lashley Test, I mean, I think it's in the top third of Rumbles, at least, and maybe the top five. I don't know. I haven't broken my list down, but this is my off the cuff. It's definitely one of the top Rumbles, I think, that I can think of.
Well, since this was such a big Rumble, we're going to double the staircase, two sets of three, so six steps, because it's such a long and such a great match. Step one, as you mentioned, JR, Flair Finley, somebody must have some tape trading thing from way back. I can't imagine these guys never wrestled together. And I'm not talking about like Nitro 98 or anything like that. I'm talking like, you know, Flair went to Ireland in like 89 or something like that. I mean, there's got to be some match buried somewhere that those two have wrestled. But it definitely had that cool feel to it. Step two, great mix in terms of the order of guys. Young and old, the different brands, sprinkled a lot of ECW early on. Great job doing the order of guys. You know, different kind of guys. They didn't clump like the superstars and clump the stiffs. They kind of, you know, mixed and matched. So that was pretty good. Step three, this is kind of a dopey thing. It's kind of like you were saying, Claire, about, you know, this is kind of minutia, like, you know, why do the segments with the ball shaker thing be so stupid? Why would a guy, now Nitro did this, somebody was beating on Benoit. Nitro gets in the ring, throws that guy out of the way, and starts hitting Benoit himself. Like, I don't know, this is like the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I don't know why anybody does that, but that caught my eye when Nitro got into the ring It's like, why don't you just let that guy beat up Benoit?
The logic of eliminating someone isn't terrible. It's more of who Benoit is. It's more like we see Benoit as such a vicious threat that you need to team up with someone against him. But it does make sense in the idea of you got to get someone out any chance you can get, because that's the only way you can win the match is if you get everyone else out. So maybe you just take that opportunity and then, you know, hope Benoit doesn't, like, destroy you.
Destroy you, yeah. But
I should say, though, as much as we don't want to talk too much about, you know, who shall not be named, they do really put him over in his portion of this match. As
yes, they did.
He almost had his own mini Suplex City in there, it felt like, at one point. I mean, I almost felt like I was watching Brock. I mean, you see, they put over those Germans, and he just starts going off on everybody. I mean, Benoit was just eternally over, never for his promos, never for his character, always purely for his in-ring, I don't want to use this word, viciousness.
Well, it's funny because you always hear, like, oh, Benoit got screwed, his title reign, then he got de-pushed. And both, you know, but reliving these pay-per-views, like, his de-push was very, very brief. It was like a month.
He's probably right where he should have been, really.
Well, it was like late 04, but then by the end of 04 and into 05, he was like right back up there. Him and Edge did the double thing on Triple H. He was in the Chamber, was in Money in the Bank, and was almost the winner. You know, he had a great feud with Edge. Then he goes to SmackDown, and, you know, he's U.S. champion. Like, he's had a really good run here.
Yeah, he never looked like anything but a threat. I mean, even when he was quote unquote deep push, he always looked like a badass who lost a match now and then. He never looked like a loser.
Right. No, and he was always a threat to get back into the title picture or win matches, and he was always protected. Like, he was always protected. He's rarely taken losses since losing the belt to Orton. Like, he very rarely takes losses. I mean, unless it's like part of trying to put guys, like, you know, get Edge over and stuff like that, but I mean, he dominated the feud with Chavo that we saw. He, you know, beat Regal, beat Finlay. You know, like, he's had all these matches where he's picked up wins. And yeah, no. He's had a really good run since he was pushed like an 03 when he came back from his neck injury.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, I mean, if you're gonna beat on Benoit, help the guy. Don't throw him out of the way and do it yourself. I mean, you know, Benoit's not exactly the easiest guy to get out, you know. Step four. When Taker came in at 30. Who, by the way, second time in his career he came in at 30. Mm-hmm. He also came in at 30 in 2003.
And wasn't he 97? Wasn't he 30?
Did he come in at 30 in 97, or was Vader at 30 in 97?
Oh, you're right, Vader. Taker was 29.
Taker was 29. Brock was 29 in 03, and Taker was 30. I was double checking because they said Taker was won at 30, but I thought Brock won at 30, but he was at 29. I thought the winner was still in doubt. I really did.
No, and Taker was 30 in 97.
Oh, he was. Okay. So second time in his career at 30. Third time. I again, let's take out of the rumors and the matches and Triple H and all that stuff. I really thought that Orton was winning. I thought you said he was a periphery guy. I really thought he was the favorite. Just based on who the champions were at the time, I really thought we were going to get the first of what would be many Cena Orton matches at WrestleMania.
So did you not think that those two matches that we talked about earlier were what was going to play out at Mania?
No.
Cena Michaels?
Well, no, I didn't think Cena Sean was going to happen at all, to be honest with you. I mean, Batista Taker could have gone in another way because they're both SmackDown guys and they could have found their own way to, but we'll get to that when we get to No Way Out. But at the time, I really thought that Orton was going to be the guy that comes out on top here. But step five, as we mentioned, Taker, Sean, I mean, just a cool moment. First time in the ring, not together because they've been in Rumbles together, but the first time they've actually interacted face-to-face since the infamous 9 years earlier, you know, back on the hinge of the casket in 1998 in San Jose at the Shark Tank. And it just had that cool and JBL, this is the moments that you love here in JBL because Cole still, as great as Cole was as a play-by-play guy, he still never grabbed the full gravitas sometimes of like these kind of moments, whereas JBL, even King, really put over the fact that you're looking at two literally of the greatest of all time in a very rare moment that you haven't seen in 9 years. So fantastic here. And the fact that they went another, you know, 9 minutes is just ridiculous. And step six, does Taker winning, now we'll get back to this question, Claire, does Taker winning tip the hand of who drops the title? Because, let's again forget rumors, anything like that. If he chose, he wasn't going to face Lashley, obviously.
Why is that obvious? Come on. Perfectly, perfectly legitimate the last time third Taker, brand.
Because the last time Taker was on ECW, he got fucking booed out of the building.
The guy just forced Test to walk away. This is an over Barry Hughes star, the kind of challenge that only The Undertaker could be up for.
Maybe Test is working for Undertaker.
Not just anyone can make Test walk away from a title match.
Maybe Test worked for The Undertaker, not. it was like kind of like a Neidhart at King of the Ring 94.
Druid number 9.
Yeah. Because think about it. At this point, Taker's winning. You're thinking to yourself, they're not going to cut Cena off at the knees like this. Not like this. I mean, would Cena-Taker be a great match at 23? Absolutely. But are they going to have Cena job out? I don't know. And are you going to break the streak? Absolutely not.
Why do you say absolutely not?
Because I don't think Cena was.
It wasn't so built at that point.
It wasn't
streak,
the thing yet. It wasn't like a. I mean, it was talked about,
mentioned, but it wasn't like this unapproachable thing.
You can't look at it like it's 2016 Cena. I mean, 07 Cena was like on his way to maybe being like the best of all time. Like,
no, you're right. You're right. I mean, it was possible. It was possible.
I think it was more than possible. I think there was a good chance it was talked about. I mean, you know, obviously Batista accepts it. I mean, there's rumors that Batista was going to end it. I mean, of course Cena would have. If they were talking about Batista doing it.
Yeah, it could
I think that's
the
difference,
guys.
Though. If it was Taker Cena, Cena would have ended it.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas they were okay with having Cena just lose the match. I mean, not Cena, Batista.
Batista. Interesting. So maybe there was an aura of mystery still there. Maybe that makes the booking of this Rumble that much better.
Yeah.
Maybe there was still an aura of mystery.
I do think it's interesting that they had Taker. Well, I guess they're both Texas guys, but still, HBK was the right. home favorite.
Well, this is his home base, right.
And he was the underdog. Taker is coming in at 30, which makes Shawn even more of an underdog. And it's surprising that they had Taker win. And I don't know, and especially seeing where it went, did it really matter which one of them wins? So maybe why not give Shawn? Maybe because Shawn can take it. Shawn can lose. Not that Undertaker hasn't lost Royal Rumbles before. Not a big deal. But when it's a one-on-one situation and it's this epic match, maybe you still want to have Undertaker look like the strong one, so to speak. Whereas Shawn can look weak. It's so, you know, in a sense.
Right. And Taker had never won. He had never won the Rumble before. And
that's a big thing too. He probably deserved it. Whereas Shawn had a couple already.
Isn't that crazy though? 17 years in this company, and never won the Rumble,
and probably the most over guy in those 17 years.
I know it's amazing. You know, isn't it amazing how every time they've gotten to this point of the creative year, he was never thought about as a guy to win the Rumble. Isn't that odd?
The only time, well, yeah, not to win the Rumble, right? The only time they even pushed him to that status was the final four fiasco when they switched everything around and had
in 97. Yeah,
that was by accident.
Yeah, isn't that weird? It's crazy. He was either the champion, which even to that point never happened, or he was in something else. It's just really weird.
And he's the kind of shoe-in guy that's like, this guy's got to win a Rumble. This character is built, and they booked him that way in Rumbles as unstoppable. It always took, you know, two guys clotheslining him, or you know, eight guys double teaming him, or something extraordinary to get him out of this match. So, in some ways, it's strange that it took this long, but I guess they always, you know, they never really had that dominant guy win for the most part. You know, you never see Andre the Giant winning a Royal Rumble. It's always right. the guy that always gets ganged up on by like six dudes, and that's the excuse to get him out without making it seem strange that this dominant figure lost this match clearly built for him. So, I mean, knowing the way they book Rumbles, I guess it's not actually surprising he hadn't won one until now. It's more surprising that he did, really, if you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to keep I definitely want to keep this whole Taker, Cena, Batista thing for Chad when he comes on at 23. Because interesting thought. I don't think – nothing we ever really talked about is, you know, how much of a mystery it still was with Taker winning this. I mean – expert booking here. I mean, expert booking, because it really does leave an aura of mystery. And kudos to them, to the company at this time, for my opinion, for having a pretty good backup plan with Triple H getting hurt. I mean, they could have thrown this thing in the toilet or whatever, totally screwed it up. And really, they didn't. I mean, I'm impressed. I was very impressed that they actually they were able to rebound and come up with something really good here as a plan B So if Triple H is healthy, Taker wouldn't have won this one either. So he might have gone his whole career without ever winning a Rumble. That was kind of crazy.
Well, they could have still had Taker win and Triple H just get the title match.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they probably would have. I mean, maybe this was their thought the whole time that Taker was going to win. But anyway, so The Undertaker wins his first Rumble, but he has three champions to choose from. Claire is hoping for that epic Taker-Lashley encounter.
I'm still holding that hope. I don't know what happens. I haven't looked ahead.
Which so. Would have been which may be a pretty damn good power match. Would Lashley have broken the streak? Who knows?
It could be, because the problem with Lashley isn't he's decent. I mean, he's not bad for a power guy.
And he was over.
Guy.
All right, enough Lashley. Where does this?
You told me we could talk about Lashley for 20 minutes and the show. You lied to me.
Shut up.
Right. Where is this, I'm here.
Where does this Rumble pay per view stack up all time for Rumble pay per views? Is it the best of all time so far, to date, to 2007?
I personally put 92 at the best of all time always, and I can't be really swayed from that. But it's probably – it might be right after it. It's really close.
I mean, 01 is pretty good.
It's the best of the modern era.
This was the
01
debate.
01 is a contender. True.
We had this debate, I think, for a while on the Brad and Chad show, and we ranked the Rumbles. I think we ended up putting 07 as the best of all time. I mean, the Rumble 92 match is better than this one, but the undercard here is much better. And
that
this Rumble
match plus the commentary plus Ric Flair's performance, and I'm absolutely tainted by nostalgia, will fully admit, but it's always going to rank my personal number one. But that doesn't mean there aren't strong arguments for this one.
Well, it's a solid undercard. You have the epic, the memorable Piper
it's
win.
It's not a solid undercard, really.
But it's a memorable one for nostalgia purposes. But
they
I mean,
have
01
tests
is
on it. I'll tell you that.
Oh, there's no test. Yeah. But there's no Lashley, which kind of takes it down a few notches. Yeah. I mean, 0-1 is pretty good. I mean, the 0-1 undercard is, I mean, the title match is eh, but you've got, I mean, the tag match is great. I mean, Jericho Benoit ladder match is pretty awesome. The Rumble's really good.
Those are probably the top three to this point.
Yeah. So, are we comfortable to say, I mean, here we are, we're on our report card now, guys, with only three shows left. I know JR is going to say, but let me ask you, Claire, since your last time on this show was the pay-per-view that currently stands at number one on our pay-per-view creative report card.
That's why you brought me back for this one.
Son of a bitch. Is this better than One Night Stand?
That's tough, actually, because One Night Stand is a very good show. I like that show a lot. It's a fairly consistent show in terms – I mean, every match, there's no test Lashley on One Night Stand. Every match is like decent. But I think I do have to give the nod to this show because it has a different kind of feel between there's two different epic moments / matches. There's Cena Umaga. And then that last 10 minutes or so of this Rumble also felt equally sort of epic between the final four and then the epic. I mean, I gotta stop saying epic. I know Shawn Michaels HBK encounter. I really, if I was gonna go match by match by match, like One Night Stand has a really strong argument. But in terms of overall, especially when we're looking back 10 years later or so, I think I'm gonna lean towards how it feels in overall importance. One Night Stand, great show, really enjoyable show. It's not the first One Night Stand. It might not even be the best One Night Stand. But this Royal Rumble, while I might put 92 slightly above it, it's right there in the argument for best Royal Rumble of all time, and that is saying a lot. So I really can't do anything but say that this is the best pay-per-view so far of the year.
Yeah, I think it edges out One Night Stand. I mean, it's got a 5-star match. One Night Stand, you know, it depends your mileage on RVD Cena.
I don't think it has a 5-star match. I mean, right. One Night Stand. I think it has a close one, RVD Cena, but RVD Cena's really can't even sniff Cena Umaga.
I mean, you could argue this is the greatest WWE title match of all time, right? I mean, if we're saying it's better than Triple H Cactus.
You could definitely argue it, absolutely.
And if you're saying it's better than Benoit Angle, Austin, Bret Hart, those two matches were not title matches, right? Those are the ones you often hear are the best matches maybe in company history. Taker, Shawn, neither was a title match, right? Later on, the later on Taker, Shawn matches. So I don't know.
I'm very partial to Cena Bryan from SummerSlam 13.
Right.
And Totally different kind of match. Almost can't be compared. I might rank Umaga Cena above it just because of the there's a feel factor there. There's
Cena
a,
Punk.
Yeah.
From Money in the Bank.
Interesting
11.
That these matches we're talking about all involve John Cena though.
Makes you
yeah,
right?
Not a surprise.
Cena Punk, Cena Bryan, Cena Umaga. I mean, it's not a coincidence that he's the ace of this company now. Even though I know he's had a lot of the haters have turned into lovers now. I mean, even now. Cena sucks means I love you, Cena, at this point. I mean, right. It's pretty much everyone recognized this guy's the man.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So with two pay-per-views left, here's the rankings at the moment from 14 to 1. Vengeance, Cyber Sunday, December to Dismember, Survivor Series, Backlash, Great American Bash, Armageddon, No Mercy, New Year's Revolution, SummerSlam, Judgment Day, Unforgiven, One Night Stand, and the Royal Rumble. Test Lashley is bad, but it's not worse than these four matches we have on our worst match
list. Definitely not.
Nah.
What
so
are the four?
The four right now: Braun Panties match from Great American Bash, Lita vs. Mickey from Cyber Sunday, Kane vs. Kane from Vengeance, and Kane vs. Big Show from Backlash. Kane vs. Big Show from Backlash is atrocious.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And
I don't even think
Test Lashley's that bad. No way.
I almost feel like both women's matches need to be rated higher because at least there's something cool for me to look at for a minute. I don't know. You're probably right on the technical level. That's a better
They're
match.
They're awful.
I'd rather watch a bra and panties match that sucked than a Test Lashley match that sucked. Let's just put it that way.
And I mean, it's the way we've been talking tonight. I think it's pretty safe to say that finally a match has usurped our number one match for best match of the report card. So here's what we have, JR, for our best match nominees that we'll probably pare down when we get to WrestleMania. London and Kendrick versus the Pitbulls from Great American Bash. This is from bottom to top. DX versus the McMahons versus the Big Show. The Hell in a Cell from Unforgiven. Triple H versus Edge versus John Cena from Backlash. Regal versus Benoit from No Mercy. You can thoughts on any of these, Claire. Edge versus Cena from SummerSlam. Foley versus Flair from SummerSlam, the I Quit match. London and Kendrick versus the Hardys versus Regal and Taylor versus Eminem from Armageddon. Of course, the latter match. Cena versus Umaga from New Year's Revolution. Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. Edge Foley Lita versus Dreamer Funk Beulah from One Night Stand. Cena versus RVD from One Night Stand. Edge versus Cena from Unforgiven, the TLC. And the new number one match for now, with two pay-per-views left on the report card, Cena versus Umaga, last man standing from the Royal Rumble. So we have, 13 matches in our best match list for this creative year. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them have Cena. Six have Cena.
So I want to introduce the Rumble match.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, and I actually think it's pretty high.
It has a case to be in that conversation, for sure.
Yeah, I actually think I'd put it pretty high. I think I'd maybe put it...
Is it better than Cena RVD One Night Stand?
No, I think I'd put it right ahead of the ladder match at Armageddon.
Okay, so...
And then right behind...
Right so behind the...
Benoit.
So right behind Cena Umaga from New Year's Revolution.
No, actually, I think it... Well, that was a tough one. Yeah, I'd probably put it ahead of that, too.
Okay. So is it better than Benoit Finlay?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it better than the sixth person from One Night Stand?
No.
Okay. So right now it's fifth.
Yep.
Okay. Royal Rumble match.
I think that's Rumble. Fair.
So, our
I mean,
top
five. If you
five...
just took the last 10 minutes of the Rumble and called it a match and told me and didn't tell me about the first part, I'd probably put it in the top five. Yep. So
our top five now. The Royal Rumble match gets bumped, so it bumps Benoit Finlay, and then the sixth person from One Night Stand, Cena RVD from One Night Stand, Edge Cena from Unforgiven, and Cena Umaga from the Rumble. So there you go. Wow.
He can't wrestle, but he puts on good matches.
But six of the 13 best matches in this creative year have him in it. And this is, 2006-07 when his main event stretch was still, brewing. This isn't even like, 2009 or 2010 or 11. So I think it's good for us here on the Place B podcast doing our vintage vaults that we're actually really legitimizing John Cena this early on while guys trash the shit out of him.
I'm sure he appreciates it.
Yeah, he should.
He's he just goddamn listening and nodding his head right now.
He goddamn and should.
Thanks, PTB.
That's right.
Son of a bitch. You guys are really legitimizing my life and career. Thank you.
You guys.
As soon as he's done with this, he's going to go listen to Lions of Liberty. I mean, he's on the whole circuit.
Use guys.
All right, let's wrap things up. Claire, thanks for joining. It's been a fun Likewise, night. Guys. Always good to have you here. Scott, next week we will likely be here with No Way Out 07. That may mm-hmm. change as the week goes on, but that's the plan mm-hmm. as of right now. And then we'll take it week by week from there. But, of course, Halloween episode will air Halloween night. That is absolute. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, I think that's all I got. I'll talk to you guys on Wednesday evening. Clotheslines and Headlines. We'll be talking ROH's pay-per-view. We'll talk New Japan's King of Pro Wrestling pay-per-view. We'll talk No Mercy. So a big pay-per-view recap week. We'll have Pete Schermacher from This Week in Wrestling and Titans of Wrestling on to talk about New Japan. And we'll cover everything else as well, like we always do. Claire, anything specific you want to plug?
LionsLiberty.com, man. But specifically, we did every time there's a presidential debate, of which there's only three, we do a nice fun roundtable recap, and I think it's really something that people who are apolitical or not really on one side or another, or even if you are, I think it's pretty accessible to everybody. We're not too dogmatic about how we break things down, because we're not really Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton fans. So if you're even remotely interested in politics, maybe you should check out our debate recaps. I think you guys might enjoy them.
It's a disaster. It's disastrous.
Yeah, a fun disaster, just like this show.
Fun disaster. All right, we're out. We'll talk to you hopefully next week, if not at some point. Take care. All right, guys, let's go ahead and throw the dashes now.
Rise!
Calabria!
Take
my break.
Take a triple large.
Papa's Pizza. No, was it Papa's Pizza? What was our Monday?
No, Planet Pizza.
I don't remember the pizza. Planet Pizza.
No, it wasn't. Sounds familiar. Yeah, with Papa's. Was well, there's the one we used to get Monday nights.
Oh, yeah, that's close.
Stop the things you do. What's